Thanks, Mom. Your microphones are live.
But are we? All right, we are ready. Good morning and welcome to the August 2nd, 2011 San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. Would you please join us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, if you could be so kind to read any changes into the agenda, please.
Amended items on the board business is item D1, which is a request to conduct a public auction and take other action relating to the escrow related to surplus and sale of the former Paso Robles Courthouse located at 549 10th Street in Paso Robles, 1st District. This item was introduced on May 24, 2011. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting page 4 of this item be replaced with the corrected page. A page from another item was inadvertently inserted when the agenda was printed. The replacement page is attached. Item D2 is also to conduct a public auction on property, real property in bulk in the unincorporated areas of the California Valley, 1st District. This item was introduced on June 21, 2011, and recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting this item be amended to add Exhibit B, which was inadvertently left out of the packet, and amend the agenda cover sheet to change the district to District 5. The exhibit is attached. Also on added items on closed session under pending litigation, number 14 is Cowan versus the County of San Luis Obispo, 15 Southern California Pipeline Construction Incorporated versus the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. Those are your changes.
Thank you so much, Madam Clerk. That will bring us to our consent agenda. I have one request from the public to speak on consent. If there are any others to speak on consent, not regular, please bring them to us as soon as you can. We'll begin with Eric Green, please, on A5, and we'll see if we have any others as well on consent. Okay. Any more on consent? I'm sorry. Mr. Greening, go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I am Eric Greening, and this is the contract for mitigation monitoring for three projects in the Carrizo. And I guess the first issue I want to raise is one of those three projects, the Twisselman Mine, you will be making a determination on this afternoon. And not knowing that determination, you probably shouldn't presuppose it. So I question your ability to act on this contract now if Twisselman is a part of that contract. On page 7, there's a mention of Public Resources Code 21080.6. I went to the law library to look it up and found it was repealed in 97, so I hope that would be clarified. There's a passage on that page that I'm just going to read into the record because I think we all need to be aware of it. Quote, "We understand that the monitoring work shall be for the construction phases of the two solar projects up to 3 years." Wait a minute, wrong quote. "Both solar project proponents are under severe time constraints related to their need to meet power purchase agreement requirements, project financing goals, and U.S. Department of Energy loan guarantees. We expect the proponents to be very aggressive in adhering to their construction schedules," unquote. That's something, obviously, that mitigation monitors need to be very, very aware of and vigilant about. But my biggest concern here is it appears that their monitoring is restricted to the actual sites of the disturbance. And with the solar projects, a huge amount of the mitigation is off-site. It has to do with the success of the mitigation lands. I find, again and again, reference to being on-site to monitor, et cetera, et cetera. And actually, the true crux of it comes on page 26 of the actual scope of work, where it says, it talks about the cost allocation, and the cost allocation is strictly by areas of disturbance. SunPower 39%, Topaz 60%, Twisselman Aggregate Mine 1%. That leaves 0% for monitoring the effectiveness of off-site mitigation, which is a huge part of this. Who is going to be watching what happens on those off-site lands, some of whom which may be acquired today, depending what happens today? Who's looking at the baseline, changes over baseline, whether the listed species are in fact occupying, are increasing their populations? I see 0% of the cost allocation going to any of that, and I don't think mitigation or the projects can move forward until that's answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. David Webb on A5, followed by Richard Margetson on A8, please.
Thank you. My name is David Webb, California Valley resident. And on this A5 consent agenda, conduct mitigation monitoring work, and I read the staff report, and it's apparently almost $900,000 to Aspen to do a study. I may be wrong, but the way I understood it was that they're going to check it while it's going along, the construction is going along. Well, they're a day late and a dollar short. And also, I believe there was a violation made when somebody went in there a couple of weeks ago in that where Mr. John McKenzie informed everyone that the 23-acre area had never been studied, and it was going to be studied. And that, in my understanding, is that old abandoned gypsum mine that's been a problem all along. A lot of people have ignored it. We can go into details on that later. But in the meantime, someone went in there with heavy equipment and destroyed a lot of kangaroo rat habitat. And there's pictures of it. It's all over the internet what was done in there without any kind of approval from anybody. They just went and did it. Now here comes Aspen along or somebody, and I guess they're going to approve it after the fact. That's what it looks like to me. It doesn't look right. So anyway, Mr. McKenzie, maybe he could answer some of these questions for us, because he said that was had to be studied, and then somebody talked to him on the phone, and he said, oh, that's been studied. Well, where's the study? I don't see one anywhere. I guess my time's about up. Oh, no, I got a whole minute left. Okay, well, that whole area down there needs to be studied. El Segundo blue butterflies have been discovered in there, and they've been up and around in our area for a long, long time. I mean, probably longer than I've been there 30 years. And I asked somebody about them. They used to work the chamomile, the small little flowers in the spring. And I don't know if you guys got them around here, but the only place that I could find them anywhere in a search was in El Segundo down by the beach somewhere. That's where it all started back in the 70s with Chevron. Had to do a bunch of, they were almost wiped out. And they're federally endangered butterflies. They're tiny. They're about as big as a little fingernail with their wings spread. And they go around and they work all the little flowers out there. They've been doing it forever. I wondered what they were when I first came here. And a guy goes, those are El Segundo blues, El Segundo blue butterflies. They're one of two. Back then, there was two species of insects that were protected by the feds. All of California is in red, meaning it's endangered, federally endangered.
Thank you, Mr. Webb.
Thank you.
Mr. Margetson, followed by Lindy Owen on A8.
Richard Margetson, this item is dealing with the adding of some additional assessments in Los Osos. The one I'm concerned about in this report is the properties on Mountain View. I know this property intimately. I actually tried to sell it at one time, so I know all six units on here. I guess my first question is, how did it get missed during the initial assessment? That six assessments didn't make the rolls. That's a minor question. But in the resolution or Yeah, resolution on page 18 of A8, under the whereases, the fifth one down. Whereas with respect to the parcel identified as a assessor's parcel number, blah, 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 the owner has consented to an additional increase of $2,297.34 in exchange for having an individual service lateral installed to serve that parcel only, which will bring the total assessment for that property to from zero to $19,670.78. I guess my question would be, this is a single-family residence. This property consists of a single-family home, about 1,400 square foot home, full two-car garage, separate driveway, and then five little kind of casita-type homes, no garages, separate pathway, common parking lot. The other six units, I think the maximum size of any of them is maybe 700 square feet. And my question is, adding the house to the assessment rolls at $19,000, why it's not being added to the assessment rolls at the full cost that any other single-family home in Los Osos would be required to pay, the almost $25,000. they're as large as most of this property is as large as most of the homes in Los Osos that are on the assessment as a single-family residence. They're asking for a separate lateral connection to the sewer, which means their flow only from that house will be going to the connection lines, to the plant, like a single-family residence on any other street in Los Osos. So I think that assessment is understated, and I also think that the assessment for the other five units at $373, may be overstated. Please address this, because I think it's going to end up coming back to you later.
Ms. Owen?
Good morning. Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I thought I'd put A7 down. Oh. And briefly on A1, which was a resolution prohibiting crosswalks in Los Osos and two other cities. The problem possibly in Los Osos is that's right across from the skate park, and it was established, and we're asking children now to walk a full block either direction to get across the street. I think they need to be very careful about changing or removing that crosswalk because it's pretty heavily used. But on to A7, which was what I had wanted to speak about. First, Bob Stark is one of the units that was downsized. He was overcharged. I believe it was 36 units, and now has been brought into perspective that he only has 24 units. And it's interesting that Bob Stark, who I would like to thank publicly, also put in an appeal on our last 218 vote, saying that it was unfair for undeveloped properties who were not going to be paying a sewer assessment to be able to vote on that assessment. Unfortunately, he lost. And then my last comment is this happens when you start reducing and changing all these assessments, which is a little late in the game. We're supposed to be receiving our first notices in December on our tax bill, which, of course, we still have not seen. We have no idea what they're going to be publicly. There's been zero information given by this board or by the sewer project. But anyway, it looks like it's constantly changing. So why was this not done earlier in the game so that this assessment could have been noticed, so that we've already paid in June what is expected to be about $78 per household, but nobody knows that this is accumulating and that in December their Merry Christmas will most likely be spoiled by a surprise. You owe the county almost $400 for a sewer that hasn't even been designed yet. Thank you.
Thank you, and that's all I have on public comment on consent, so I'll bring it back to the board and ask my colleagues if there are items they would like to discuss. Mr. Meacham?
A5, please.
Okay. Mr. Gibson?
Aye.
Mr. Teixeira?
None.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, A5. Follow up, please.
A5. Mr. Patterson, it's in your district, so we'll start with you and then go to Mr. Meacham.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I did see planning here. Ellen and John, have they disappeared? I wanted them to address some of the questions. Here they come now. I'd like staff to address some of the issues raised by Mr. Greening and Mr. Webb. I did have a conversation with Ms. Carroll yesterday and asked some of those same questions, and I know that they can clarify the issues raised.
Right. Thank you. Ellen Carroll, Environmental Coordinator. I have a couple of comments, and then I think I'm going to have John speak to one of the issues. So this contract that we have on the board's agenda today is for one of the projects. It's not for all three of them. What we did was when we went out to bid, we did the request for proposals, and we had all the proposers bid on all three of the projects. But they're all in different time frames a little bit, and they're all separate pots of money. And so we will bring you three separate contracts. So this contract is just for the SunPower project. There was a comment regarding the severe time constraints. I think that was from the proposal that was submitted by Aspen, and I think we all recognize that all of these projects are under severe time constraints. I think the information from Aspen was that who's the consultant, that they recognize that there are severe time constraints and that they need to make sure that their folks are there at all times so that we don't have the monitoring efforts stopping the project. So I think that was the intent there. The question about there's no allocation for monitoring of offsite. What we have allocation for at this point is for the consultants to help us review the offsite mitigation lands and where those are and do they meet the performance measures and the standards and the requirements for those to actually be successful offsite mitigation lands. And then once these projects are completed or close to completion, we will do another request for proposal for the longer-term monitoring. So that will come later. And that will include monitoring of the off-site lands. The other thing is that Fish and Wildlife Service and Fish and Game will also play a major, major role in monitoring those lands. And then there were some questions about the gypsum mine, and John McKenzie, our project manager, is going to speak to those. Okay.
Thank you, Ellen, Mr. Chairman. John McKenzie, planning. Just real briefly, there is a gypsum mine that's a part of the proposed SunPower project that is going to be reclaimed as a part of this process. There has been a minor amount of activity. I believe it's the same mine. The 23 acres is more in line with the proposed Twisselman mine. This gypsum mine is actually, I believe, originally 70 acres. But aside from that, I'm pretty sure that this issue that Mr. Webb was referring to was the Martin Gypsum mine that's on the SunPower property. But I did go out and review the site. That there was a piece of equipment that was removed as a part of the initial reclamation efforts. There's a screening piece of equipment that was used as a part of the gypsum operation some time ago. That was removed. A minimal amount of disturbance around that did occur, a very small amount, probably about 30 feet around this piece of equipment. The existing roads were used for the low boy that was also brought in to take that equipment out. We did not see any evidence of any habitat destruction or species being impacted, and that would conclude my comments about that.
Okay. Follow up?
Yeah, Mr. McKenzie, then the issue raised about activity on that site was actually the removal of equipment, not bringing equipment in.
That's correct.
Operating. Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Meacham, follow-up?
If I could, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, and I know that this is not part of our contractual arrangement with SunPower or these other projects, but I'm pulling a comment out of Supervisor Patterson's book. I'm curious to know about the land or the management of everything once these things are underway and afterwards. I talked to the Resource Conservation District, and they're kind of curious as well, who's going to be doing a lot of this land management, if you will, once this thing's in operation. Has there been any discussion about that with us?
As Ellen, I think, alluded to, you know, we probably are looking to having a land trust oversee those lands that are there's going to could be easements on the lands, or there could be outright acquisition of lands, and that we expect that there could be a land trust that would be charged with that oversight of the easements and or land that would be obtained for mitigation land purposes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further on A5? Okay, Mr. Gibson on A8, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask one of our esteemed project team to come speak to the raising of the assessments from zero and the exact amounts on the five parcels and why the sixth is different.
Good morning, board members. I'm John Waddell with the Public Works Department. The property on Mountain View was inadvertently missed when we created the assessment district in 2007 due to an error in our county assessor's database. It was somehow coded as a vacant property. So when we created the assessment spread, it was assessed as zero because it was vacant. But there are existing multifamily properties. It is a multifamily property. The methodology established in the assessment district sets assessments for multifamily. It doesn't look at, you know, the actual square footage of each unit or, you know, what the occupancy is of each unit. So all multifamily is assessed the same. And that's why both the smaller units and the larger unit all are have the same assessment as multifamily. As we were going through this process, and it was John Diodati took the lead on that, getting each of those property owners from each of those different units to voluntarily sign to agree to assess themselves for the project. The one owner that owned the home that is somewhat separate from the other units asked to have their own lateral for ease of connection. And we reviewed that and determined that we could do that. We would just, you know, there was a set charge in the assessment the assessment district in the assessment engineering reports for a lateral, so we added that to that one unit, whereas the other five units all share the other lateral, and so that's, you know, that's how it worked out, that they all have a multifamily charge, but and five of them are sharing one lateral, whereas the remaining unit has its own.
Okay, thank you very much. With no other questions, I'd go ahead and move approval of consent.
Okay, as amended, I'm assuming.
Don't see.
I'm sorry. I put as amended, and it's not amended.
Okay, it's not.
And
amended.
I'm sorry. Who is accepting as our amended second?
Okay, Mr. Teixeira seconded it, I think.
Mr. Teixeira.
So, Mr. Gibson moved. Mr. Teixeira seconded. If no other further discussion on consent, Madam Clerk, please roll call.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yeah.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Thank you. We will move into our public comment period. And as some of our folks file out and some of our folks file in, we will begin with Gwen Taylor, followed by Ben DeFada. General public comment for items not on the agenda. Well, okay. Well, we'll see when we get to that. That's several items away. Okay.
My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. The ISJ has not been adjudicated. Having been formed in 2006, Golden State Water Company is now going to the PUC applying for a second increase in water rates. Their rates will be dramatically affecting Los Osos. In January of this year, they applied for an increase and obtained a 48.5% increase. This is the first of this year. This increase, now Golden State is again applying for a 48.5% 0.86% increase, which equates to $28.06, or a total of $57.44 to $85.50 for a basic water cost per month for residents in Los Osos Golden State District. Golden State failed to implement a nitrate treatment process that was supposed to be covered by the first increase. Now they are projecting the upcoming increase is to cover cost of purchasing water, pumping costs, improvement infrastructure, and promote efficient use of water. Pretty late. These increased rates should have been implemented in 1992 at the time of the Level 3 severity, which the county did, with tiered rates to cover costs of moving wells, pumping the upper aquifer, improving nitrate treatment, and decreasing the advancement of saltwater intrusion into the basin, which is a major problem right now. Now. Has been for 40 years. These costs plus the sewer water treatment costs should give every supervisor on this board pause to reevaluate this project and the proposed sewer costs. The community is being subjected to more in cost increases daily. We listen to every day cost of living. Cost of living is going up, but the cost of income is not moving one bit. Where do you expect these people to get this money at the exorbitant amount that this board is proposing for a sewer project that is, in essence, to take care of a water problem? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. DeFatta, followed by Lindy Owen.
Well, we haven't fun yet. Good morning, Chairman Hill, Board, Public, Sheriff, and DeFatta here from the bankrupt and pillow talk village of Los Osos. With Supervisor Gibson and Paul Ogre's track record since Senator Blakeslee's AB 2701 legislation giving a sewer project to the county, there is now a track record of all the wrongdoings that these two have done to this poor prohibition zone of property and business owners. Gibson and Ogren's taking, so far, 5 years of continuing to want to build their unaffordable $200 million gravity sewer, which has almost cost us the loss of our only drinking water from our only good aquifer because of their insistence to only build a faulty, overpriced, unaffordable, antiquated gravity sewer with big pipes and deep trenches when an alternative would cost us about $100 million. Of course, 3 years ago, they had a shovel-ready project. But here we go again, spending another $5 million to redesign his gravity project. Mr. Ripley of Ripley Pacific Company almost finished designing the step system in 6 months if he was not interrupted by the county 6 years ago. Was this delay that is causing saltwater intrusion pre-planned to make us buy the Nacimiento project water that's in the red? Well, time will tell us if you are putting a fast one over on us again. I remind you that it sure looks like the public's suspicion of crimes done by this county is pronounced with what they have seen since the county's takeover. No competitive bidding of all alternatives, conflict of interest with consultants, contractors, engineers, pillow talk between a member of the county and a Los Osos CSD director, cronyism in planting moles in our CSD. Bob Ogre and knew, and some of you supervisors had to know, that Ms. Kelly was disqualified to continue to hold her job as vice president of the Los Osos CSD, ripping off the salary under false pretenses, influencing and voting on important issues, i.e. like bankruptcy and water issues. Gravity system without looking at cheaper alternatives. Failure to get competitive bids from other kinds of alternative sewer collection systems. Failure of Mr. Gibson and you other four lacking leadership for insisting to get this project done in a reasonable time schedule and at a reasonable cost to the community. You all have cost this community much anxiety and concern to their health and future. your lack of humanity against your neighbors and friends. Yet I have seen how quick you all are in giving your time and contributions to needy causes. But maybe it's true, Mr. Gibson does hate Los Osos. Call it gentrification of several thousand people forced to move out of their homes, or what dictators do to millions of people all over the world, it's almost the same. Just in the prohibition zone, businesses have gone out of business. There are about 25 commercial building vacancies. There are many homes that are over 30, 40, 60 years old that need repair work, but their owners just don't have the money to fix them.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta. Your time is up. We appreciate it. Ms. Owen, followed by Al Barrow.
Good morning again. Lindy Owen from Los Osos Prohibition Zone. I wanted to start first because I've been accused of being just a complainer from Los Osos, but I would like to preface that I have been on the LOCSD Water Utilities Committee for, I think, 4.5 years. I have been participating locally. I have been on the LOCAC Advisory Council, Los Osos Community Advisory Council, for 7 years now. I have been active in my community. I am on top of things, and I come here each week because of that concern. And so I just wanted to preface that. I'm not somebody that just sits home and waits for a chance to come in and complain. I'd like to begin with an apology for what I said last week, that there was no resume from Dan Gilmore, who applied to be our general manager and was hired lickety-split with no questions asked. I did get a resume copy from him from my public records request. But what's very interesting, and my concern is that his close association with Mr. Ogren and with Maria Kelly has definitely driven the decision-making for the last year and a half in Los Osos on water issues, on the bankruptcy, on the RAC committee, and many other giving away of our assets. But his references are John Wallace and Associates, pretty big players in our sewer project, and, of course, Paavo Ogren. So here we have Dan Gilmore, who is basically hired by Maria Kelly on the ad hoc. She puts Dan Gilmore in as our general manager. And if you look at his record, you can see that he did very little to really take care of some of the engineering problems that he promised that he would be able to do for us. Our AGP video service has been totally ignored after a year of requests that he get the updated equipment. Anyway, just to move on, my apologies for not having that paper ahead of me. And I wondered why Mr. Ogren and Mr. Gibson and Warren Jensen and assorted other people attended the bankruptcy hearing for Los Osos. That had nothing to do with the wastewater project. And it sort of shows where the connections are, and that upsets me. And how did the LOCSD lose their second most important income source, which was our waste franchise agreement? And that losing that, because of decisions that were made over that year and a half, we lost one of the most important assets that we had, and it's going to compromise the CSD's survival. And that's only to the county's benefit. And lastly, Mr. Gibson, again, could you please tell us what the water source that will be available upon completion of the sewer, could you please tell us what that water source is? Is it not Mr. Ogren's and the county's 50% uncompleted subscription to the Nacimiento project?
Thank you, Ms. Owen.
Thank you.
Mr. Barrow, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning, board members and staff, public. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. I come here frequently because I'm concerned about the impact on lower-income people, including seniors, disabled, homeless people, people at risk of losing their housing. And last Thursday and Friday, I went down to the bankruptcy hearing, Los Osos CSD, and I noticed that the county had hired three very expensive Los Angeles attorneys for that process. And I want to tell you a little story. When I was younger, I had a job as a gangway guard in the San Francisco waterfront. And the ship's crews would come back often drunk, and some of them would fall off of the gangway and have to be taken to the hospital. And in that regard, I just make that comparison because you and your staff have been like drunken sailors, spending everything. It's none of your money. None of your money. None of your money, Mr. Gibson. You're spending our money. And the ratepayers, as has been stated earlier, are going to have to absorb those costs. And this is the most expensive sewer in the United States. There's no need for it. I got a study yesterday that showed gravity sewers leak raw sewage into drinking water supplies, not only the aquifer, but into the collection system. Last year, I took a course at Cuesta College on water delivery systems, and it's a fact that they do suck in water. It's very common for 10% leakage in a drinking water system. So if you put raw sewage into that mix, that's a disaster for people who don't know what they're drinking. So you need to consider a sealed gravity system. This is criminal what you're doing. Not only is it not healthy, but it's also unaffordable. There's no reason to burden people in this environment of deficit reduction. In the coming years, you'll be getting less and less from the state and less from the government, cutting more and more services to the needy. So I ask you, please, to look at what I sent you last night and read it carefully, because this gravity sewer is not only very expensive, but it's environmentally very damaging. That's been proven in the studies that I sent you, and it's close to Santa Barbara. They put dye in and followed the water, and the water came up with bactericides in it from the sewage. So please reconsider the gravity sewer. Include a sealed system in this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Mr. Margetson, followed by David Webb.
Richard Margetson. I apologize for not having reviewed the last agenda item till 10:30 last night. Somebody brought it to my attention yesterday. But I have to question again, because now it's almost continual. I know you gentlemen have deductive reasoning skills. I'm wondering when they're going to come to the forefront. It's constant. And I'm tired of coming to these meetings. You know, the people from Los Osos today, between the five, six of us, $30 worth of gas again to come for 2-3 minute comments. We bring things to your attention, and it always takes more than one attempt at this microphone to get anything done. Let's go back to the retrofit ordinance for Los Osos. 4 times that ordinance was changed because of public comment at this microphone. When somebody could have sent it back to staff and said, hey, let's get everything right in at this time. We're tired of hearing people come to the microphone. You must enjoy it. This is like the wastewater project when it was going to be Tanini spray fields. Somebody should have brought that forward immediately. You knew that was going to be a no-brainer for the Coastal Commission to deny that. When you changed the Mr. Gibson changed the language from basin to valley. You knew that was, you should have known. Through some type of deductive reasoning skills, you should have known that wasn't going to play in Los Osos. We only have one basin and the water needs to stay in it. We bring things to you. I don't come up here on the fly. When I come up here, I have the ability to back it up. And I think I have in the past. This last issue is going to come back before you again. They made a mistake. Staff made a mistake. You can believe staff, which you always do when they come to the microphone, but as you notice with some of these other things, staff does make mistakes. They're not perfect. We don't expect them to be perfect, but we expect somewhere in the interaction between the supervisors and staff to get it right. And the next one, the next major one that's going to hit you down the road is that rates and charges ordinance, because we're almost at that point, gentlemen. Commercial flow in the ordinance, 4%. Golden State has produced documents lately that say it's four times that much.
Thank you, Mr.
Evidence
Martin.
From your own purveyors.
Mr. Webb, followed by Eric Greening, please.
Thank you. David Webb again, California Valley resident. This is a general comment. California Valley, Carrizo Plain, it's been really hot out there. It's very dusty and very windy. We always have, for the last couple of weeks, we've had three digits of degrees. A friend of mine was out early one morning, or just last Saturday morning, and I said, man, it's going to be hot again. And he goes, yeah, I heard it's going to be 80 out here. So I don't know where, I don't know where he's getting the temperatures, but that's not, we get three digits for weeks on end, and it's not unusual. I wanted to tell a little story about a trip I went. I don't know if I made this story, told you this story before or not, but it's a short story. We don't get our mail at our houses, so we have to go up to the mailbox. They've got some boxes posted up there for us. And I was on the way up Belmont one evening. It was night, and on the way up to the mailbox, going past the old gypsum mine, the one that was discussed earlier, three K-rats ran in there. And on the way back, two of them. So that was like just past that area in my car, maybe 20 seconds each way, K-rats. So you can imagine how many are running back and forth in there. I don't know what makes Mr. McKenzie such an expert on endangered species habitat. Maybe he can explain that to us. And that was more than 30 feet. Anyway, I'm digressing. I just wanted to tell you on the way in, I saw one roadrunner, numerous doves, quail, one bluebird, vultures, hawks, and rabbits. No deer this trip. I usually see at least one or two. No antelope. And by the way, we have antelope in California Valley. They drift in and out. Pictures of them. I think that pretty much covers it. 50 seconds. You guys have let me go over, so I'm going to go back and sit down. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Webb. Appreciate that. Mr. Greening, please.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and first, a minor request of the chair. I just made a mistake, I realized. I put D1 on a speaker slip, and if you could put a little head and a little tail on it, I don't need to speak on D1, but I do intend to speak on D2. The big news, obviously, in this country and around the globe have to do with the sort of wrap-up of these tragicomic events in Washington. And what we now need to find out is how it's going to affect our state and our county, and how the effect on our state is going to affect our county. The Senate is probably voting on this deficit reduction package / off-budget process / whatever other kinds of melodrama it is. Then the president will sign it, and then we'll find out what's in it, as will most of the lawmakers who didn't have time to read it. I would urge you to give a decent interval for scrutiny, but as soon as possible, schedule a hearing for us to understand what's in it and what our forthcoming adaptation efforts on one side and lobbying efforts on the other side need to be, because I understand the cuts will come in two stages. The first stage is apparently already in whatever the people saw and didn't see and voted on. The other part will be up to this commission, or it will be up to a robot. Either the commission's recommendations will be accepted by the start of the year, which is halfway through this fiscal year, or something automatic will happen. And again, we're just beginning to understand the implications of all of this. But the implications will be real, just as real as they are from Sacramento and the uncertainties there, where, again, in the middle of the fiscal year, we'll either be continuing with this year's budget or there will be some unanticipated cuts, including in-home supportive services. We don't know what the unanticipated or anticipated cuts are with this federal process or how soon they will hit. But again, I do ask for an agenda item as soon as we can start to make sense of this. And then when we have a chance with our federal lobbyists, and to the extent that some of the cuts will be passed down from Sacramento cuts, certainly with our friends at Peterson Consulting. I will, however, end with the good news. For a while, we're going to sleep better. After they've finished their work today, my understanding is Congress is going home for a month. The state legislature is home until about the middle of this month. So we can sleep better, but it means they'll be among us, and it means we have a chance to maybe bend their ear while they're among us and remind them who they're working for. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. And that will do it for public comment. So we will bring it back to the board and move into our hearing items. And Madam Clerk, if you would be so kind as to introduce our first items of the morning.
Our first item is D1, a request to conduct a public auction to approve a resolution and grant deed. 3, authorize a corresponding budget adjustment. And 4, authorize the county real property manager to execute the purchase agreement and related documents to close escrow related to the surplus and sale of the former Paso Robles Courthouse located at 549 10th Street in Paso Robles, 1st District. This item was introduced on May 24, 2011. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay. And I see our real property manager, Ms. Maddalena.
Good morning, Chairman Hill, members of the board. I'm Karen Maddalena, County Real Property Manager. And I think our segment today is going to be brief because for the Paso Robles Courthouse, the old Paso Robles Courthouse, we received no written bids. So we are asking that the board approve the reschedule of this auction to September 20th and authorize the chairman to sign the amended resolution, which I have right here. And by allowing the chairman to sign the amended resolution, that will give the clerk of the board authorization to provide notice for the reschedule of this public auction to September 20th.
Do we need a motion on that? I think. We don't have a public comment on this one. We have on the next one.
I'll move the staff's recommendation to postpone to September 20th and recommend that the chair sign the amended resolution.
Second.
All right. Thank you. Moved by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Gibson. There's no further comment on this item. Roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Yep. Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes, thank you. And Madam Clerk, if you'd introduce the next related item, and then Ms. Maddalena will comment on that.
That would be item D2, a request to 1, conduct a public auction, 2, approve a resolution, 3, authorize a corresponding budget adjustment, and 4, authorize the county real property manager to execute documents to close escrow related to the surplus and sale of county-owned real properties in bulk in the unincorporated areas of California Valley, 1st District. This item was introduced June 21st, 2011. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay. Ms. Maddalena?
Okay. Similarly, we received no written bids for the California Valley properties that we were offering to be sold in bulk. We are asking that the board approve the reschedule of this auction to September 13th and authorize the chairman to sign the amended resolution, which will give the clerk of the board authorization to provide notice for the rescheduling of this public auction to September 13th.
Okay. Thank you. I do have some public comments slips on this one, so I will open it up to the public. Begin with Calvin Phillips, and that will be followed by Eric Greening and then David Webb. Mr. Phillips.
Thank you. I have some handouts that I would like to give you. Good morning. I'm here because I need your help. I have a house in Cayugas, but I also have a house out in California Valley. And I've been trying to buy the adjacent property that the county owned to the property that I have out there. I submitted my $300 for their assessment. The county came back and said this is what we want for that particular piece of property. I thought it was high, so I made an offer that was less than what they asked for. they rejected it, and I made that offer late last year, then early this year in February. I made a second offer, which was fairly close to what they had requested, and they rejected that offer. So I was about ready to make another offer that was just going to pay them what they asked for. And I found out that by chance that they had bundled all of the property, including that property next to me. So I called them and I said, you know, I'm willing to pay you that, and can we just go do this? And they said, sorry, we're not going to sell you that property because we bundled it. So I'm not trying to put a monkey wrench into what the county's trying to do to sell that property, but I would like to buy that adjacent property to me. And I'm not against the solar plant, so this isn't some kind of a solar plant thing. This, I just really wanted to buy it because on the next page I show some concerns. For example, fire load, since the sheep out there at the area where the fire load has really increased, and I like to protect the house and property that I have out there. So what I'm asking is if the board would exercise some fairness in this and ask the General Services to give the residents of California Valley, if they want to buy that adjacent property to them for the same reasons that I do, to give them an opportunity, because there was no notice on this bundling at all. Like I said, I just kind of ran across it by accident. And I'm asking your help to restore this the county's offer to me that they made so that I can purchase that property. The second page of it just kind of goes through some of the issues that I think maybe the board would like to consider and the service district about, you know, the impact of what selling that patchwork set of property will do, and who's going to own it, and what's the responsibility, and like I said, my main concern is fire and health and safety for the sale of the property. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. And since you have given us a copy of this, and General Services, our property manager, is here, we'll ask that they will respond to you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And the clerk has all my contact information.
Perfect.
Thank you.
We will respond. Mr. Greening, followed by Mr. Webb.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I do support the rescheduling. I think it's a good sign that this is slowing down. I have been asked by a board member of EcoSlow to report to convey three actions by their board. One is that they also, as I have asked, would like clarity on the deed restriction as to whether it restricts oil exploration and development either now or during or even after the lifetime of the solar projects. We haven't yet seen an answer to that, and their position is if it does not restrict it, it should. Then the second was simply a question about the ability, assuming SunPower were going to acquire these properties, the ability by today to have assessed the suitability of the habitat in the time frame allowed. And I support having more time for such assessment if they are going to acquire this, certainly. And then the third was the impact of fragmentation itself. If these fragmented properties were going to be acquired as mitigation, off-site mitigation for a solar project, which is on one unfragmented footprint, where is the mitigation for the impact of replacing a large coherent area with fragments, in other words, the impact of the fragmentation itself? So I share all of those concerns. Evidently, nothing is likely to happen today, but I hope that before you have anything that you act on, whether it be September 13th or whenever, that these questions should be answered, and hopefully they will be answered in written form in the staff report so we don't have to improvise at the last minute at the hearing. On on some of the issues that were raised in the response to the consent agenda that may cross-fertilize with this, my understanding then is that it is not within the scope of the present mitigation monitoring contract to assess the long-term success of any parcels sold for mitigation purposes, that some of the work will actually be the work of agencies rather than applicant-paid, in other words, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Fish and Game, rather than applicant-funded mitigation monitoring. And, of course, that raises the immediate concern in the wake of the recent actions in Washington and pending actions in Sacramento. What if those agencies that we're leaning on get severely cut? So there are a lot of questions to be raised if these lands are to be used as mitigations.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Before we go to Mr. Webb, County Council's got its light on. Mr. Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and board members. I'm Warren Jensen, the County Council. Regarding the comments from Mr. Phillips, he didn't mention that he has brought litigation against the county, but I believe there is definitely a lawsuit, and I think it's Phillips. And, yeah, he's confirming that he is... have pending litigation regarding this particular sale. So because of that, and there's a pending hearing scheduled in the not-too-distant future, I don't think it would be appropriate to have a discussion about the merits of that, his issues at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Mr. Webb? Mr. Phillips, thank you.
Thank you. David Webb again from California Valley. Did this board receive, each board member receive a letter from North County Watch regarding this?
Mm-hmm.
Correct, yes?
Yes, we did.
Okay, so I forgot her name, but she said it's rescheduled for September 13th, and I don't understand if that's a reschedule to do what, because it really needs to be restarted under 25515.2 ABC 9D. Oh, that's D. I'm sorry. 25515.2 ABCD+12EFGH. Now I know my ABCs, and that's all the regs that cover this letter. If you guys read the letter, September 13th isn't, it needs a restart. So September 13th, if they start in September 13th, okay, that's good. But you can't just take it, to continue it to the 13th. I hope I'm making myself clear. I'm not a lawyer like I'm sure a lot of you are. But if you want to ask me, you know, I can read some of these parts here. It says the county's obligation under government code, the one I just read off.
Mr. Webb, we will get a response from county council if that's what you would like.
What?
Would you like us to get a response to county council to the?
Yeah, I'd like to get an answer, but I'd like to read this. All owners of land, no, the county's obligation under this code is to notify by mail all owners of land adjoining the property. Has the county mailed a notice to all landowners who own property contiguous? That would have been something like possibly 1,600 property owners. So the county has an obligation that was not met. We can't just continue on from there. We have to start from the beginning, guys. Yeah. Is that what you plan on doing on the 3rd?
We will get a response to your...
Okay. I guess then I guess I've said enough.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Jensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Warren Jensen, the County Council. Yes, we've looked at that letter from North County Watch. It turns out there are several alternative ways in which the county can sell property. The North County Watch letter cites provisions that apply to an alternative that we're not relying on. That requirement only applies if we elected that alternative, and we are not pursuing that, so that requirement does not apply to this sale.
Okay. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Ms. Madalena would respond to Mr. Greening's comment regarding the oil exploration. There was an exhibit that was added to the agenda packet through the core agenda, and it addresses the prohibitions on mining and development to those parcels. So could you speak to that, Ms. Madalena?
Certainly. Karen Madalena, County Real Property Manager. And we did address in the staff report some of the issues that had been brought up regarding the prohibition of subsurface mining and extraction of mineral oil, gas, or other hydrocarbon substances. So specifically in the board letter, it reads, the deed restriction prohibits construction, creation, or erection of any residential building or structure, recreational vehicle park, or campground on the property, or the surface or subsurface mining or extraction of mineral, oil, gas, or other hydrocarbon substances. Additionally, the exhibit that Supervisor Patterson is referring to is reference to the deed restrictions. It's an Exhibit B, and again, it states the following actions are prohibited. The construction, creation, or erection of any residential building or structure, recreational vehicle park, or campground on the property, and B, surface or subsurface mining or extraction of mineral, oil, gas, or other hydrocarbon substances.
Very good. Thank you. And in reference to the mitigation value, as Ms. Carroll pointed out earlier, any properties used for mitigation has to be approved by the agencies that oversee those environmental issues, and so that's a determination by another agency, as I understand.
That is correct, and I think planning could speak to that more specifically if you needed more explanation.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just kind of curious to know that if we get to the 13th, we have no bids on this, why would we not want to unbundle this to allow for neighboring property owners to participate in this or even look at that possibility now?
I think that based on where we're at with our marketing and our noticing and our process, rather than completely start from scratch, I believe it's in the best interest of the county to give ourselves one more segment of time to try and conclude this, just like we're trying to do for the Paso Courthouse. And then at that time, and during this time, we can be discussing or talking about what if we receive no bids, what next?
I really don't see the comparison between the Paso Courthouse and this. I mean, there's obviously a lot of surrounding property owners there, mm-hmm. as opposed to a commercial piece of property in the city. So that doesn't have any relevance to me, but... So we will have the opportunity after the 13th, if we so decide to continue, to come back and take a look at the opportunity to unbundle this and allow for that.
Right. And that's a whole nother process that I think the board would need to seriously consider the efforts that would be going into something like that. I mean, it's a whole change in the direction that we are going with this bulk sale.
Right, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Madeline. Did you have a further question?
No, I was going to say if there's no further questions from my colleagues, I would move staff's recommendation to continue this hearing to September 13th.
Second.
And approve the amended.
Instruct the chairman to sign the amended resolution, Mr. Patterson?
Yes, absolutely.
And our second was Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Thank you.
Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, we are moving on to the next item. Madam Clerk, when you're ready, please introduce it.
That would be item E1, consideration of the proposed Memorandum of Agreement for the Sphere of Influence Update with the City of Atascadero, 5th District. Recommend approval, instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Stevenson, I see.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Hill, members of the board, Chuck Stevenson, planning staff. Before I begin, I would just take the opportunity to recognize Warren Frace, who is the community development director from the City of Atascadero, is here. and may have some comments, and Vic Montgomery, who is working with them on their specific plan. If you could bring up our... Thanks. The Local Agency Formation Commission is presently underway in preparing a Sphere of Influence and Municipal Service Review update for the city of Atascadero. And part of that process involves a memorandum of agreement between the city of Atascadero and the county. And the memorandum of agreement will, will enable the and set forth rules and guidance for cooperation between the city and the county for preserving ag lands, for open space, rural character, and working together to develop the sphere of influence in an orderly and logical manner. Also, each agency will refer projects to each other within the map referral area that I'll show you in a moment. There are some guiding principles that are in the memorandum of agreement. I'll just highlight a few of those for you. In particular, the city has in their general plans smart growth principles that are reflected in the MOA, as do the county's strategic growth principles will be considered by the city when they're completing their specific plan. In preparing the memorandum of agreement, city staff, local agency formation commission staff, and planning staff have worked collaboratively over a number of meetings in its preparation. And the Atascadero City Council approved the memorandum of agreement on June 14th, 2011. What we see here is a map. The green area represents the city of Atascadero, including the sphere of influence. We've also included the portion of the Eagle Ranch area that is within the sphere of influence and actually has been in the sphere of influence since 2003. And just mention that the sphere of influence line is not changing as a result of the current review. This map is showing the project referral area. If you can detect the blue line, the large blue line that extends quite a ways out into the unincorporated area, these are areas that when the county gets discretionary projects, we'll refer them to the city for their comment. A bit about the Eagle Ranch annexation. The city of Atascadero is planning to annex a portion of the Eagle Ranch. The city included the Eagle Ranch project in their general plan update in 2002, and then a portion of the Eagle Ranch was included in the sphere of influence in 2003. And currently they have a specific plan and environmental EIR underway for their project. This map is just to show you generally, location-wise, the Eagle Ranch in some context. You see San Luis Obispo at the southerly portion of this map, the Los Padres National Forest cutting an angle across, and then the large Eagle Ranch area south of Atascadero. Eagle Ranch is a working ranch. It's large, about 6,500 acres, and within that ownership are 452 existing lots of record that were part of the early Atascadero colony. These have all received certificates of compliance from the county, and they have water entitlements from Atascadero Mutual Water Company. The reason I mention this is because these lots could be developed in the county at this time in their current configuration, but this has not been the desire of the landowner or the city. The landowners are also planning to gift a permanent agricultural conservation easement of over 3,000 acres to the San Luis Obispo Land Conservancy. And this map is generalized, showing where the Eagle Ranch specific plan is in the darker green and the remainder of the ranch that would be proposed for a conservation easement. There are some specific goals that are mentioned in the memorandum of agreement, and I'll just highlight a few of those. For the specific plan, there would be walkable neighborhoods with logical connections, as well as future transit opportunities where those are feasible, a trail system for pedestrians, bicyclists, and equestrian, I believe, and a full range of housing opportunities for a wide spectrum of incomes. and then cluster development that would reduce significantly the amount of impacts that would might otherwise occur if the existing lots were developed in their current configuration. Based on that, staff is supportive of the memorandum of agreement, and we'll look forward to commenting and reviewing the EIR and specific plan when that's completed. That has not been completed yet, but we will review that prior to the annexation process continuing. With that, staff recommends that your board approve the proposed memorandum of agreement between the county and the city of Atascadero.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Questions for Mr. Stevenson on this? Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Stevenson or Eagle Ranch representative or the city of Atascadero, just a ballpark idea of the timetable on the development of the specific.
I think I'll defer to Mr. Frace to comment on that. I believe they're in the EIR constraints process right now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, thank you. We have hired an EIR consultant. They are underway in the first phase, which is to do kind of a preliminary overview of all the constraints. We expect that to wrap up this year. The EIR, formal EIR specific plan process, is probably another 18 months. So I think we're looking at about 2013 for annexation hearings is the goal right now.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know whether we have a specific public comment, but while I have the floor, just give comments. I think the development of memorandum of agreements between the county and our city partners in these efforts is a tremendously important step. It's one that this county is getting recognition for elsewhere in the state. And we'll look forward to an orderly and interesting conversation of how we move forward with this proposal.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, just to comment on the process, the Smith family, who owns the Eagle Ranch, has been working with the city through their representative, RRM Design, the past several years to involve the community in this process of developing the specific plan and setting the goals. And as Mr. Stevenson pointed out in his presentation, they have agreed to essentially put half of that property in a perpetual conservation easement. There are 452 parcels already on that ranch platted during the original colony development in 1913, and they're coming forward with a mixed housing, mixed-use project that will have great benefit, I think, for the community. And as Supervisor Gibson pointed out, this memorandum of agreement process that we've used with a number of communities in the county provides an opportunity for the county and the city and the landowners to work together as we move through this specific plan process. And I don't know if you have any public comment on this.
I have a question
open?
Before we
okay,
we will have to open it to public comment, but I still
right.
have a question.
Well, then I'll
hold on
wait until we move
okay.
through that process
Mr.
to make a motion.
Mr. Stevenson, could you go back to the early slide that you had that dealt with, I guess, with the MOA with the Atascadero, and I'm glad that Mr. Frace is here. Appreciate that. And strategic growth principles. I think that was one of your earlier slides about Atascadero's yeah, I think so. Okay.
Is this the one here?
Yeah, I believe so. I just wanted to review that real quickly because it went by fast. If I could ask Mr. Frace real quickly, because I agree with my colleagues who serve on LAFCO that these are important agreements and models. Do we see a good correspondence between the county's principals and the cities on this, and that has made this, I guess, move more smoothly?
Yeah, we've been working very closely with your staff on recrafting this memorandum of agreement. Our council has endorsed it. We do believe that our general plan and the county's development goals are very similar. We're looking for compact development. At the same time, this is a large ranch, so there's going to be some, large estate-type residential also included. But the majority of the ranch, even within the city, will end up as open space and ag preserve, just because it's so constrained by hills, oaks, and archaeological sites. So we'll pick the best sites for development. It will be built around a village core where we'll have a mixture of housing, affordable housing, senior housing, some commercial, as much as, you know, is feasible in this type of a setting. So I think it's going to be the best case mix between doing kind of a large rural character project and incorporating the appropriate smart growth type features as well.
Okay. So some of the key principles, and we've had some of these discussions that the county has in strategic growth, the city has, and we've been able to find a good correspondence on them.
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I will open it up to the public, and I have not received any requests to speak, and I thank Mr. Frace and Mr. Montgomery for being here, and Mr. Stevenson for his hard work and report. And so with that, I'll go to Supervisor Patterson for a motion.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. I move approval of staff's recommendation to adopt the MOA between the county and the city of Atascadero.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Patterson, second by Supervisor Gibson. If there's no further discussion, Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes, thank you. Okay, appreciate it. Good work. And we are zipping along. Madam Clerk, our next item, I see Mr. Jansen ready to climb aboard.
Your next item is C1, a hearing to consider a request by the Creston Classic Rodeo to waive minor use permit, processing fees. Fifth District recommend approval of the waiver of fees and instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay, thank you. I see Mr. Jansen here. Mr. Jansen.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Matt Jansen, planning staff. As the clerk just read, this is a request for a fee waiver from the Creston Classic Rodeo. What I want to do first is do a minute or two on fee waivers themselves and then touch on this specific case. Through the adopted county fee schedule, the planning director has been delegated the authority to grant fee waivers on projects that are, for the most part, a public benefit. The director, or his delegates, and in this case, in most cases, it's me as the manager of the permit center, is allowed to waive up to $5,000 on public benefit projects. If an applicant disagrees with our determination on a fee waiver, they can appeal that decision to your board. This is not the case with the Creston Classic Rodeo. We agree that the project meets the criteria. It's just that the total fees are in excess of $5,000. They're much closer to $7,000, so we decided to bring the entire amount remaining to you. With that, we do support the fee waiver, and the total fees to be waived associated with the minor use permit are $5,675.04. So with that, I'm open to any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. That was very straight to the point, so good that I see no questions. So I will open up the public. I see some members from the rodeo. I don't know if you would like to speak. If you would, please state your name for the record. We will need you to fill out one of these yellow slips to give to our clerk before you leave, but please state your name for the record.
Okay, thank you. My name is My name is Rick Heim. I'm current president of the Creston Classic Rodeo. Just a little history on the rodeo, the most recent first. In the past 2 years, we've put about $70,000 into the rodeo grounds and grandstand, VIP seating area, VIP concession, etc., in remediation through, I guess, what we call as-built permits. The rodeo started 15 years ago, and things have changed. So, as I say, we put about $70,000 into the rodeo grounds. Over that 2 years, we've had about 900, the politically correct statement is person hours, as opposed to man hours, I think, in volunteer labor, just in the remediation process. Over the past 15 years, we presented $110,000 to our local catch fund. And I'm sorry, I can't remember what CATCH stands for. It has something to do with Catch the Dream. But it actually is the funding for our Creston Community Center, which we are working on building as soon as we get enough money. We have about 50 volunteers annually that actually work the rodeo, which is about a three-day period. And that doesn't count our weed whacking and all that other stuff we have to do to prepare for the rodeo, just the rodeo volunteers themselves. And I did some rough numbers last night, and it kind of surprised me, to be honest with you. We figure our total volunteer hours over the past 15 years are around 30,000 person hours as a volunteer organization. And I want to tell you, it is like herding cats. And if anyone has any questions to me, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, thank you. Mr. Patterson, did you have any questions?
I don't. I appreciate Mr. Heim coming down and sharing some of this information with us. I've watched it progress over the last several years, the work they've done out there. It's really impressive. I've attended a couple of the rodeos, and when they talk about a classic rodeo, it is truly that. Mr. Heim or Mr. Hansen, if you would talk a little bit about, this is not your typical rodeo that you'll see on ESPN. It's a community rodeo, and it really is a historic event in a way, because it's more similar to what cattle people will do on their ranches and farms, the events themselves. Can you talk a little bit about what a classic rodeo is?
It's a ranch rodeo. I think when the rodeo first started, I wasn't around in those days. I don't think Tom was either. Cotton Rosser helped get it going with our local community, and it had bronc riding and it had bull riding because, of course, Cotton got paid for all that stuff. So that's what he wanted in it. The local organizers decided they wanted to change it more to what we consider to be a ranch rodeo. It's the kinds of things you do on a ranch, and you don't typically ride Brahma bulls on a ranch. I'm not even sure they break horses on a ranch the way they used to. So we've incorporated an awful lot of things like branding. We don't actually brand cattle with a hot iron, but we do brand them with a painted iron. And everything is a timed event. We have barrel racing. We have, the one I love the most is mutton busting, kids riding sheep. I mean, I just...
Mutton busting.
I just crack up every time I go out there. I've got some of the best photographs of that. A lot of roping, team roping, culling cattle out of a herd, not actual cutting as you would see at the cutting competition in Paso, but similar to it. We have ribbon dogging for the ladies. We don't expect the ladies to try and dump a steer the way the guys crazily do, but we tack a ribbon onto a steer, and the lady has to ride the horse out and grab the ribbon off the steer's rump. Just another extension of the kinds of things one would do even today. And what we're really trying to represent is the history of the cowboy in California.
Great. Okay. Well, Mr. Heim, thank you for giving us a little update on the activities. And if there's no further questions, we'll bring it back to the board, close it to the public, and Mr. Meacham, perhaps he's going to convince some of our county council to do some of these mutton busting.
Actually, my grandson actually rode in that mutton busting, and my granddaughters have participated in your rodeo. I'm just curious, though, why you don't go ahead and incorporate an event like herding cats.
Yeah.
Because it's harder.
Yeah. All right. Well.
All right. Thank you.
Seems like
I'll fill out the Ellis Lip.
I appreciate that, Mr. Heim. All right, we're going to bring it back to the board, and it seems like this is one of those occasions when we want to do what we can to help a terrific organization that does something very good for our cultural heritage here in the county. So, Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you. Just one other quick comment. As Mr. Heim mentioned, they've been doing these upgrades for the past number of years, and it is quite an impressive facility. I think they have everything completed now, and I want to take this opportunity to thank our planning and building staff for working with the Creston Classic Rodeo Committee and getting the permits. doing the upgrades, and especially Matt and Karen Nall has been working with them, as well as Bob Rudio from our building department and Cammie Griffin. Yes, Rick.
I'd like to second that.
And so it's noted. Not only been a community effort, it's been a county effort, because we know the value, and from the staff report, they speak to the many things besides the rodeo that they do out in Creston. In fact, our own sheriff's posse uses that facility to train, and I appreciate the work that the Creston community is doing. And with that, I'll move approval of staff's recommendation to waive the fees for the minor use permit.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Patterson and seconded by Supervisor Meacham to waive the fees. And I think I can concur with all the comments that were made. And I know that Mr. Jansen and perhaps his wife will be mutton busting in the coming year. And we'll have photos of it for our website. With that, Madam Clerk, a roll call.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
You bet.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Thank you. We appreciate it, and we're happy to help. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Matt. All right. We are zipping along, and we're already at the point of our closed session, our noon recess. So, I see someone. Did you want to speak to the closed session item, ma'am? Could you come to the microphone, please? I'm sorry.
Alana Reynolds from Atascadero.
Right.
I filled out a yellow slip to speak on the one that I see is moved to or delayed. So I thought I was having an opportunity to speak on C2.
C2, that is in the hours after, ago. That's in the afternoon after the recess, ma'am.
Is there any chance I can't be back. I did not know it was.
If you could submit your comments in writing, that would probably be the only alternative that we could do, and we'll put them in the record at that time. But
when
we are not
it continued to.
It's only in the afternoon. It's not continued actually. That's you're talking about the appeal hearing on the
hearings continued. C2.
Hearings ongoing into the afternoon.
Yeah, that's just meaning after our recess, ma'am. So if you want to speak on that item, if you would put them in writing and get them to us, we can make them part of the public record if you can't be here for the afternoon hearing.
Any suggestion on time? Because
we'll be back at 1:30.
Yeah, and that we'll get to that hearing about 2 o'clock. But we can make it part of the public record if you get it in at some point.
And you can bring it over to the clerk recorder's office and hand it in to me there at any time.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. With that, there is no request on closed session. So, Mr. Jensen, a time estimate?
About 30 minutes.
About 30 minutes. Sounds like 20 to me. We will be back at 1:30 after we go into closed session. Thank you.
Microphones are live.
Okay, thank you. We are back in session. Welcome. Mr. Jensen, a report out of closed session, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board did meet in closed session. No reportable action was taken.
Okay, thank you. We're going to have a presentation, so I would...
approve the resolutions.
There we go. I don't have to finish my sentence. Second?
Second.
All right. The move to approve the presentation calendar by Supervisor Meacham, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. Roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes, thank you. We are pleased to be able to honor Deputy Probation Officer Nancy Lindholm. So if she and perhaps her boss, our chief, would come to the lectern, and I'll read the resolution, and then we'll let you guys chat a bit, Nancy. It's our pleasure. This is a resolution honoring you for your 29 years of service to the county. Whereas on August 6, 2011, Nancy Lindholm will be retiring after 29 years of service to the County of San Luis Obispo, and whereas Nancy began her career in community corrections as a contract deputy probation officer in September of 1982 and was eventually hired as a permanent employee on July 1, 1984, and whereas in March of 1991, Nancy was promoted to the position of supervisor and worked in various units, including the juvenile hall and supervising probation's gang task force members. And whereas Nancy has been a leader in prevention services in San Luis Obispo County, and her knowledge of the juvenile justice system and child development has been a tremendous resource to law enforcement, teachers, social workers, and others working with at-risk youth. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize and celebrate Supervising Deputy Probation Officer Nancy Lindholm's 29 years of dedicated service to the citizens of San Luis Obispo County. And, Nancy, if you come up and get your resolution, please. Come back and we'll get a picture in front of the board. So, Nancy, we'll get it. If somebody who has a camera there wants to grab a picture of her before we let her. Yeah, stand here and make us look good.
We're actually optional backdrop.
Right. Yeah. You could Photoshop us out, put in mountains.
Okay, ready?
Ready.
Okay. Chief Salio, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Jim Salio, Chief Probation Officer. Thank you for the resolution honoring Nancy for her years of dedicated service to the Probation Department, and I really do mean dedicated service. Nancy's been a tremendous asset to the Probation Department, and I think by the amount of probation officers here today, she's touched many lives in the probation department. I certainly know in my career she's been very helpful and very influential, and I've learned a lot from her working with her over the years. Nancy is a huge asset to our county and will be deeply missed. In fact, there won't be any way to really replace Nancy. We will just try to do the best we can, but Nancy will always have the best for the children and best for the families in our county at heart. She's done that every step of the way in her career, extremely, extremely dedicated. Her file at probation is full of letters of compliments from families she's worked with over the years, and she's touched many lives, and I wish her all the best in retirement. As a tradition in the probation department, we have retired Nancy's badge, and we do have a plaque to present to her.
Great.
As a tradition, that plaque is from the management team and from the Probation Officers Association.
Thank you.
You get last word, Nancy.
Oh, I do. Well, I thank the board very, very much for this very gracious tribute, and certainly to Chief Jim. I just had a lovely lunch with him, and it makes it hard to leave because I have made so many friends. I'm way too nervous to say anything particularly brilliant today. I am in awe. I'm very much in awe of this tribute. But one thing that's very important to me is that I'd like to share this honor today with remarkable deputies and probation staff, because you guys have all been so important in my life and taught me so much. And I read your notes that you shared from the lunch the other day, and it's just so awesome. I thank you guys for all that you taught me. And I leave, as I told you before, I think at the lunch, and I leave with wonderful memories, wonderful, wonderful stories, many of which we shared the other day, and lifelong friends with all of you, and I thank you so much. And this is a heck of a send-off. Thank you all very much.
Best of luck, Nancy, and it's clear by all your fellow colleagues there that you're going to be missed. So we thank you very much. And we are moving on as our probation folks leave to go back to work.
Back to supervising.
Go back to work. Thank you very much for being here. Madam Clerk, if you would introduce the first item, as I see Ms. Knoll getting into place.
That would be item C2, a hearing to consider an appeal by California Serengeti Corp. of the Planning Commission's denial of conditional use permit DRC 2003-00059 for a 100-bed rehabilitation care facility located on Soda Lake Road in California Valley, District 5. Recommend denial of the appeal.
Thank you. Ms. Nall, when you are ready.
Actually, I need about 2 minutes.
Okay.
I see a coworker has bumped me.
Oh, you've been bumped on the thing. So we will. How do we? Do you want to sing for 2 minutes while?
Let's see. What song should we sing?
It's too brief to get to. Well, I'll just go over what we're going to do, so our appellant knows what we'll do here. Is that after Ms. Nall makes her presentation, then the appellant will have 10 minutes to make his case. And then there will be public comment, and then the staff might, in fact, actually then they'll have a 5-minute rebuttal for the appellant Serengeti, and then staff might interact with the board, and then we will deliberate. So essentially 10 minutes opening statement, 5 minutes rebuttal for the appellant. If that's clear, and you're ready?
Right.
All right, we laid it out for you.
I apologize for that. I was here at 12:15, and somebody must have bumped me at 12:20.
Okay.
So, again, today we're here for an appeal of the California Serengeti Corporation, which is formerly known as Hazari Incorporated. Your Planning Commission denied this project back in February of 2010. The applicant and appealed the project in March. The project is a conditional use permit for a rehabilitation center, which we call a residential care facility in the land use ordinance. That's the code that we call it. It was for approximately 140,000 square feet of facility, approximately 100 beds with 24 employee apartments, and it had amenities including tennis courts, swimming pools, and spa facilities. The site is located in the village of California Valley. It's on the north side of Soda Lake Road, a mile and a half north of Highway 58. This is a land use category map to orient you. The project is in the agriculture land use category, and it's just north of the commercial retail zoning. There's approximately 8 acres of commercial retail zoning in the village, which has a motel, historically a restaurant, gas station that's gone in and out of business, but that's the site there. Here's an aerial image of the site as well. The little yellow box to the south is the commercial retail area. The proposed facility was basically in the middle of that agricultural zoned piece. The appellant has raised 6 appeal issues, and I'll briefly go through each of those. The first issue is that the residential care is allowed in agriculture category. The appellant believes that the project will be a benefit to agriculture. Your Planning Commission found that the project was inconsistent with Ag Policy 6, 11, and 18. The second appeal issue is based on the character of the neighborhood. The appellant believes that the neighborhood really is junkyards, mobile homes, and there's not much character. The Planning Commission found that basically due to the size of the project, the size and scale, that the project was, they found it inconsistent with the neighborhood character. Kind of moving quickly through this, the third appeal issue is based on ag viability. The appellant believes that there is little ag value to the lot based on the soils present there and the availability of water. The Planning Commission found that there could be some ag viability on the site basically due to water and the large lot configuration there, which is suitable for grazing and dry farm. The fourth issue is based on habitat. The site, the applicant and appellant has claimed that the site can't be farmed because of the presence of kit fox. Basically, if there are known dens, then Fish and Game would regulate the site. The appellant or applicant would have to determine that the kit fox would not be harmed if they were doing farming or any other development on the site. Also, the site is within the kit fox 4-to-1 ratio, so any development that's approved on the site, they would be subject to the 4-to-1 replacement ratio. Fifth appeal issue has to do with public services. The project, the appellant has claimed that the facility will have its own on-site security and fire protection. The commission found that public facilities would be impacted by this remote location and the size and scale of the facility. The Sheriff's Department and the Fire Department both have concerns over serving this type of use in this location. And moving quickly, the last issue is water availability. The applicant claims there's at least 500 gallons per minute well in that vicinity or on the site. Commission again found that this would be a competing resource for water, for agriculture, and again, Ag Policy 11 states that you shall maintain the water availability for ag resources and not impact that. Then there was an issue that came up, I guess, in board meetings yesterday regarding the use of residential care, which is an allowable use in agriculture. It is not an allowed use in commercial retail. It was something that our director asked me to clarify. And that is all I had for presentation, and we're asking that your board uphold the Planning Commission's denial of the project.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Nall. And before I get to my colleagues, I also want to let my colleagues know, if they haven't, that with us as well is our fire marshal, Mr. Lee, and also Linda Kinnicky from the Ag Department. So if you have any questions outside of that, you may call on them. Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nall, we have received a letter from Mr. Tabb suggesting a scale down of the project and a relocation of the project. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Okay, I'd like to give that to you, and you can review that if you would. And we can follow up with that after Mr. Tabb gives his presentation.
Okay. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple clarifying questions as we consider that, or the proposal or the one before us. Could you go back to the best parcel map vision? I just want to clarify the site plan. The actual site didn't seem to be clearly specified to me. There was an arrow pointing sort of to the middle of the parcel, and I was curious whether there had been a specific proposal.
I do have a slide of the site plan that is found in your staff report. Would you prefer that?
I'm actually
would you
more
like
interested in the footprint of it on the parcel, just to try to get a sense of its location on the parcel. Yeah, that's a good one. So first of all, the white lines are parcel boundaries, or
actually assessor parcel boundaries. It's a little confusing. From some recent research we have done, this entire 632 acre parcel is one legal lot, and it surrounds that commercial retail
as a separate legal lot.
The commercial retail is actually two legal lots.
Okay.
However, there's assessor parcel numbers. So the white lines are the assessor parcel numbers.
Got it. And then where arrow points to project site, is that
That's approximately where the facility would be on the larger
okay.
lot.
Is there a specific proposal? I mean, is there a surveyed specific proposal where this is?
The only thing I have is what's in your package was that site plan.
That's what I need.
Yes, so I would say no.
And is there a well test on the well that's claimed to be 500 gallons a minute?
There's some well information in the file. However, I have not reviewed it. We have not done any type of CEQA analysis, so I hesitate to answer whether it's for that particular site or if it's I can say that we believe in this general area that this is where water is available.
Okay.
That in the valley, the north side is known to have water.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Supervisor Meacham?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm trying to get clarification process-wise. This is significantly different, this proposal that's just been handed to us relative to the ones in our staff report. So I guess I'm trying to understand where do we go from here? I mean, if this is not, if what's in the staff report is not going to be requested by the applicant, then what do we do here?
What's before you today is appeal of the planning commission's denial of the project that was before them,
right,
which is in your staff report. This is has not been requested formally by the applicant, letter.
And so the obviously then the planning commission hasn't seen this either.
Absolutely. Right. There's been no application, no site plans. So,
okay.
And this is the first time seeing this.
Thank you.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you. Ms. Nall, if you would put that slide back up, I just wanted to emphasize, I think you mentioned the white lines. The parallel white lines actually represent Soda Lake Road.
That's correct.
Sorry. So
yes.
The commercial property, which is framed in bold yellow there, the small rectangle, is actually on each side of Soda Lake Road.
That's correct.
And okay. And one other thing I think that's important to point out is this project has been in the works. I think originally it was submitted in 2003. And Ms. Cavanaugh was the project planner at the time, and she's moved over to the Parks Department, and Ms. Nall has picked this up. And so it does have a long history, and Ms. Nall is new to the project.
But fully capable.
Thank you.
Supervisor Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. Ms. Nall, on the Supervisor Gibson asked about the water. What about sewer for this? Would be standard septic tank?
That's correct.
Okay.
No sewer available.
And perk tests and all that stuff?
Nothing has been done.
Okay.
Just for the history, like Supervisor Patterson said, it's been in the process for quite a long time. There was a lot of modifications to the project and finally went to the Planning Commission about a year ago, February of 2010. So it was in for about 7 years before it actually got to the Planning Commission.
And as you stated earlier, if a person's looking for water out there, this is the best place to find it in this area?
Generally, that's a real general statement, but yes.
And so this is a common place that the residents and businesses out there have septic systems and don't have problems with them where?
I would not want to answer that specifically. There are, as you know, spots throughout the county that may have water available and may not. In this general area, the north side, it is thought that there's water available and that the water quality is better than the south side.
Okay.
As far as septic, I don't really have a lot of history on whether I don't know if we have problem septics, but generally they're for single-family houses.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Just to clarify procedurally and to touch on Mr. Meacham's questions, I want to go to County Council based on the submission. Mr. Orton?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to indicate an applicant always has a right to withdraw or amend his application, and if that were done, it would then have to go back through the process.
So for us to do anything with whatever it is that has been given to us, it would have to be sent back.
Right, and also if you were going to consider approving it, it would also have to be sent back because I don't believe there's been any environmental review
right.
done.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you. Any further questions from colleagues? If not, then we'll go to the appellant applicant. If you could, please, you have 10 minutes, and then you'll have 5 minutes afterwards after public comment.
Good afternoon. My name is Kenneth Tabb. I'm the president of the applicant, California Serengeti Corporation. I really don't have much to add than what I have already put in the paper, but I'm ready to answer any questions you have.
Okay. Well, I think, Mr. Tabb, I think we will have some questions then, if you'd be so kind. Sure. Board members, questions on Mr. Tabb? I'll start with Supervisor Meacham.
I do. Mr. Tabb, obviously, this proposal that you've just handed to us is pretty new, and if we were to even consider this, you understand this would go back to the Planning Commission for reconsideration.
Sure, and we have to have architect redraw the plans, scale them down.
So I guess I'm assuming then that you are withdrawing your request that's been originally proposed?
If that's the procedure, yes, I am.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Patterson?
Yes, I would. Actually, I don't have a question for Mr. Tabb. I have a question for planning relative to this process.
We'll get that. Mr. Tabb, if I could, the facility you're proposing would serve what kind of clients do you perceive, and at what cost, I guess, is an interesting...
It is for high class. There's no question about it. We have so much facilities, and that's the reason the government will not pay for the regular people with problems, and this is especially for people. Come stay there. We plan to have everybody have a horse for them. They come to get them involved in nature. We will do more agriculture there than ever been done or will be done, because we want to have organic gardens. We want to have fruit trees. We want these people get involved with taking care of their gardens and getting vegetables for their fruit for their own. So, and they we will have horses so they can ride their horses. We'll assign a horse so they can take care of. We want to get their mind totally out of the city life and their atmosphere that was before, totally new. And it's very unique. And
so this would be drug and alcohol rehab?
Basically that, but other people can come lose weight or they have other depression problems, they can come. It's going to be alcohol and drug-free facilities.
And this would be, as you said, for people of higher income?
Yes, for sure.
And in your business model, is there a sense of how much it would cost for somebody to stay in this proposed facility?
But there are comparables in Malibu that I'm familiar. They charge between $30,000 and $50,000 a month. Depends what kind of counseling they have to provide, what kind of services they have to do.
Okay. And does your company have experience in such a facility?
This company, no, but I personally been involved in drug testing labs and with different companies, and also have done a lot of research through Betty Ford Clinic and others. They have promised that they will send the business to us if we are successful to build something unique like this.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. Tabb?
Yes.
Do you have questions?
I do. Mr. Chair, I'll go ahead and ask them now. I was going to wait and discuss it with planning staff, but I wanted to get some clarification. Mr. Tabb, your original project had approximately 80 suites for clients, and then you were estimating as many as 200 full-time and part-time staff to staff a facility of that size. And you were anticipating building about 24 housing units for staff. And one of my concerns was the number of employees that would be commuting simply because there's not residential homes out in the Carrizo currently or in California Valley. And I'm curious to know if downsizing this current proposal that you've submitted just this afternoon goes from 80 units to 40 units, would there be a comparable downsizing in staff, or what is your staffing numbers for that facility?
Really, well, not that much, because we never wanted expected to be 100% occupancy. We didn't want to be. A lot of times we wanted to have a larger suite so they can have their relatives, if they come, they can come stay there with them at the times, especially if they're teenagers, their parents can come and stay. But that we never really expected to have more than 30, 40 patients there.
And so that's what you're anticipating now? So your staffing level would be...
Almost the same, because, yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions for Mr. Tabb? So, Mr. Tabb, just to clarify, if I could, so are you formally withdrawing the appeal, or you would rather, I mean, and I want to clarify maybe with either Ms. Knoll or Mr. Orton, if, in fact, what you've submitted to us today is going to represent a, is that something that you want to submit formally to planning and begin the process over, or how are you foreseeing this so that we're
yes,
clear?
That's what I would like to, because definitely want to scale down and want to move the closer the project to where our water sources, and I would explain about the water if you're interested in the quality of the water.
Let me clarify with Ms. Knoll so that we procedurally make sure we handle this as we need to.
As staff, we would like a fresh submittal, a brand new application to close out this file and start a 2011 file.
Okay. So is that essentially, Mr. Tabb, what you would like to do?
I really don't like it. It took 7 years to get this point. I don't want to start this from scratch another 7 years. I like to just amend the application, withdraw this appeal, and amend the application, which staff really originally recommended that we should reduce the size and move the location. And we are basically doing what staff asked, planning staff, not the your staff.
Right. Mr. Meacham?
I guess kind of to follow up, Mr. Yeah. Chairman, thank you, and Karen. What would be the difference of his withdrawal or an amended application in terms of the process?
It's similar.
It's similar.
We would put out a new information hold letter that requires all the complete. It really is just.
And I would assume that there's still an awful lot, even if this were to, if hypothetically the board were to approve something along this line, there's still an awful lot that's going to have to be submitted from information.
Absolutely.
So actually an amended application is you're going to be going through basically this a renewal process in a sense.
Not necessarily. I mean, we have to bring an update or whatever else we want to do, but I don't have to have a pre-application meeting anymore. I don't have to have new drawings submitted. We have so much already, you know.
Well,
what I'm trying to understand, though, is, I mean, if you've modified your project considerably, you would be providing a new set of plans, I would assume.
Just new set of drawings. We're not going to change, like, spa, the restaurants. We just eliminate the number of the rooms. It would be much simpler and cheaper process.
Well, let's clarify again what would be expected from planning so that you're clear. We don't want to send you away in any sense confused. Ms. Knoll, if you could restate
what
it is.
We would need a revised project description, a complete project description with plans that detail that project. So site plans, floor plans, elevations, and then accompanying water information, perk tests, Kitfox, et cetera, to go through the CEQA process. So we do have and Jim Orton could help us with the Planning Commission action. How do we move forward?
Jim Orton from County Council. I think it'd be an amended project or a new submittal, and it'd have to go all the way through the hearing before the Planning Commission.
Okay.
Okay. Is that clear, Mr. Tabb, to you? And you'll get a chance, obviously, to interact with planning.
Yes, you know, whatever is legal and practical.
Okay. Mr. Patterson, did you have
I have a question to staff.
Oh, okay. Mr. Gibson.
Similarly, okay. when we close public part of this, I have questions for staff.
Okay. Okay, if you have nothing further, Mr. Tabb, we'll open up to the public.
The only thing I'd like to add is that
please.
We're going to only cover 3 acres with the buildings. Total is 10 acres with the pond and all that. I don't think denying is really fair when there's a solar companies got approval for 6,000 acres of same kind of land, much better land than our land, actually.
Okay. Are you referring to what's been approved before us or what you're hoping to change?
No, I'm saying just I try and see if it's fair deny our project when there's a, for covering 3 acres,
right,
and where the solar companies got approval for six, covering 6,000 acres.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. We'll give you a chance to have a final statement as well. So do we want, do you want to ask staff questions or go to the public?
Mr. Chairman, I'd sort of prefer we get through all the public input, close the public, and bring it back to the board, but colleagues have different thoughts.
Let's do that. I have three requests to speak on this. Michael Foster, are you here, Michael?
He's not.
Okay. Then David Webb, followed by Susan Warren.
You might want to just mention that. Or.
And we have received a written comments from Milana Reynolds, who was here earlier but could not stay, and a clerk has them for the record. Mr. Webb?
Good afternoon. I guess the other guy didn't show up?
Apparently.
Okay. Well, it's all kind of past tense now, but I did have a couple of things to say about Mr. Tabb's project when it was before it is now. It looks like the environmental aspects, the water, the ag, and the other things that was looking for a recommended rejection seems to be have been everything's in the past tense now, but it was a contradiction because kangaroo rats and kit fox, ag land and water, all these things were a problem for his suggested eight acre project, and but they seem to be just mitigated away. The industrial solar projects, and it seems a little hypocritic. But now this is over with, and he's doing a new thing. And I'm not promoting him, but I think he was getting a raw deal, as he just mentioned. But I don't promote anybody that says California Valley is full of junkyards and mobile homes. I live in a mobile home. What's wrong with mobile homes? That's a little prejudice. So that's about all I got to say. It just seems strange, and I know it, if the applicant hit on the idea of how can one entity get 6,000 acres or whatever it is, I think it's more than that. I don't know what it is. And it can all be mitigated away, and everybody wants solar. That's the consensus. But nobody even the kit fox are real important when it comes to Mr. Tabb's project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Webb. Ms. Warren?
Good afternoon, supervisors. I'm Susan Warren, and I'm here representing the recovering community. And as you know, one of the few resources that we have in our county, North County Connection, for any kind of treatment. And I didn't realize he's been trying to do this since 2003 to put in residential treatment. And we, in the last 3 years, have lost the only two residential treatment programs that we have, Pasos de Vida and Project Amend for men. And Pasos de Vida was for women and children. Now San Luis Obispo County has none. We have no formal detox program. We don't have enough sober living. We have very few. We are in a crisis mode in this county, and this would be a grand opportunity for us to begin to build on that. And I'm glad he's going to be doing it for celebrities, because lots of celebrities turn around and donate back to provide services for the indigent. Besides that, how much money is he going to be bringing in to county coffers that you can certainly use? And it will be a model that all of us can begin to look at. As the realignment happens and drug and alcohol comes down to our county level to be addressed from the state, and then we, right on the back of that, we have the health care reform, which will be requiring your physicians, primary care physicians and ER physicians, to inquire with people about their substance abuse and mental health issues and then refer them to treatment. Now I ask you, where are they going to refer them in San Luis County? We don't have anything. And I don't know. To me, it looks like we're looking at the perfect storm in the next few years. And we're not prepared. So I hope that you see this as a step forward to offer something which could then be built into something even larger. That is how the recovery community tends to work. And a lot of celebrities have then gone and created residential treatment programs for the indigent, for others. We could be, this could be something really big for our county. And I'm tired of wineries, man. You know, if this were a winery, would it have taken him this many years to put this together? You know, alcoholics and addicts aren't criminals. We have a health issue. And it can be treated, and it can go into remission, just like cancer. So let's get on the forefront. We're starting with a blank slate here, so why not start with the best and build from there? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Warren. That is all I have on public comment from on this item, so I will close it to public comment, bring it back to my colleagues.
5 minutes for Mr. Tabb.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Mr. Tabb, we do have 5 minutes for you to make a closing. If you could come to the microphone, sir, if there's anything you'd like to add.
No, I just want to thank you, Susan.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Tabb. So we will close the public portion and bring it back to the board. And Supervisor Patterson, followed by Supervisor Gibson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to just comment on Ms. Warren's comments. And granted, we do need to work towards providing more detox and residential facilities in San Luis Obispo County. I had a number of conversations with Mr. Axelrod, who was the manager of Project Amend, and his problem stemmed from being able to have enough clientele to keep that program functioning, and he was charging $3,000 a month. And Mr. Tabb has mentioned that his clients will be paying $30,000 to $50,000 a month. So I think we're talking about different communities of need here. And so I'm not convinced that what he is proposing would service the county community. Also, a couple of the other issues that came up in the discussion of the facility that he has proposed is its remoteness. And I did have a conversation with our fire marshal, Mr. Lee, about issues around that remoteness. Granted, with the construction of the solar projects, we are enhancing both fire protection in the area and law enforcement in the area, but still CAL FIRE and Fire Marshal Lee have some concerns, and I would appreciate it if he would come up and speak to that, even though we will have, during the construction period, at a minimum, have better staffing out in California Valley. There still is an issue of remoteness of this facility and the protection of the clients using it. Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, Paul Lee, your County Fire Marshal. You are correct. There are several concerns we have. First and foremost, the staffing of the California Valley Station will only be for 3 years. The duration of this project will go much longer than that. So there is the possibility of that type of service being provided deteriorating after that threshold. Moving on to the size of the facility, we're looking at a 140,000 square foot structure with two people that are going to be committed to that engine 7 days a week. There is not a lot two people can do for a structure of that size when we're talking about suppressing fire as well as making evacuations. We rely on surrounding fire stations to support in that first alarm assignment to assist in that type of terrible event. Our second engine that's fully staffed is coming from Shandon. It's too long to wait. The fire's not going to be subsiding. The evacuation's not going to wait. The evacuation of those people from those smoky conditions. Granted, fire sprinklers will help reduce that. There's still an atmospheric component. We had talked a little bit about the commuting employees of up to 200 people. That causes an off-site impact. We addressed that during the solar projects. However, now we have multiple large-scale commuting events going on at the same time that two people on a single fire engine are going to be overwhelmed with. We move through to the level of care. These are high-risk patients that are going to have significant problems going through the detox period. There are some other types of patients that will be there that were mentioned, but we take a look at the remoteness that they're at and the level of care that we can provide as a basic life support engine. That engine's not slated for paramedic service, and the definitive health care that they would need at a hospital if the facility could not provide that would need to be transported far away. It's an hour and 15 minutes for the ambulance to get there, load in stabilization time, as well as another hour and 15 minutes back to Templeton. That's, you know, a significant amount of time for that person to be in distress. It's a high-risk patient. Other than that, I'm open to any more questions you have. We're just significantly concerned about how remote and how far away that this is and the lack of staffing out there for such a large facility and the types of activities that will be going on in that facility.
Any further questions for our fire marshal? Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Mr. Patterson, do you have
yes,
any questions?
Yes, just to follow up with staff on a procedural level here now. As Ms. Nall stated, this project was first submitted in 2003, and it's changed a number of times. And I do want to emphasize, and it's articulated in the staff report, that much of the problem was in the longevity of that was Mr. Tabb not responding with information or payment and so forth. And so I don't want people to think that it was the county's doing, that it's been, you know, 8 years in the process. It's been numerous changes to the project, slowness in getting information to the county. And I did meet with Mr. Tabb and a number of representatives from the Serengeti Corp. Quite some time ago, we talked about his plans and what they wanted to do out there, and I did express some concerns about the size and some of the issues that had already been revealed. And I want to point out, too, that Mr. Tabb owns the commercial property out there currently and is well aware of the community and the needs of the community. And, you know, I know staff and I would work willingly with him to help develop some of the needs of the community of California Valley that would be compatible with that commercial property that he already owns. My question to staff, again, is procedural. If Mr. Tabb were to resubmit another project, and I can appreciate staff's desire to close this out and get it off the books and start over, because there's been so many changes over the course of the last several years that a fresh start would be, I think, a good thing. Should we go a different direction where we just resubmit another project, would that come with a new application fee, or are we still working on that original application fee that was submitted with the original set of plans? How is that handled? Because that concerns me as well, that we continue this and continue it and continue it, and it continues to rack up staff time and Planning Commission, if it goes back through the Planning Commission, and then changes again at the last minute. I think we might be better starting with a clean slate, but I would like staff's input on that.
Mr. Hogue?
I'll go ahead and answer that. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, but my instinct tells me the initial application fee has been used up because we spent a lot of time with this project and getting it to this point. It would be preferable from a staff perspective for this project to be withdrawn, appeal withdrawn, the project withdrawn, and then th- the revised project that Mr. Tabb wants filed as a new application with a new application fee. However, if your board directs us to bring the revised project through under the current application, we would still want to see a real-time billing agreement so we could recover our costs from this point on. Remember, there has not been a CEQA analysis done. That's a lot of work that still needs to be done.
Okay. A withdrawal of the project would be a formal request from the applicant. Another way of managing it would be to deny the appeal and uphold the Planning Commission's denial of the project that was submitted, and then if Mr. Tabb wants to submit another project, he could do that.
He always has the right to file a whole new application for a new project.
Okay.
There's not, in our jurisdiction, there isn't the system of denying something without prejudice so they can come back within 1 year. They can come back at any time with a revised project. But it's a new application.
Mr. Gibson?
Those are the main issues that I was concerned about in the amount of time this has taken, and with the number of changes it has taken, it's quite clear that a lot of staff time has been expended. I was just curious, technical question, was this ever formally accepted for processing?
It was not.
It never got off an information hold. And that's a telling thing, because, and you can tell it from the slide that doesn't show a specific site layout. So I tend to think that under that circumstance, and I think it would be helpful to Mr. Tabb, to start with a fresh slate and to maybe have a quick conversation with the staff indicating those specific things that need to get up, to get into the hands of our planners in order to be able to consider whether a project's appropriate or not. So I would tend to favor the clean slate.
Mr. Meacham?
I'm going to agree with my colleagues on this, too. And I think, Mr. Tabb, by you wanting to submit a new project, it's going to you're going to be required to have that pre-app meeting because it's a different project. And so by starting over, maybe they can get you through this process a little bit more expeditiously if you have the information provided to them that they're going to be requesting. I know this is probably a long process for you. This is the first that I've seen in this project, and then today to see a revised project. So if there's a way to start over again and have this project take a different route, then I'd be more supportive of that.
I'd just like to mention a couple of points that we have everything county has asked. We paid all the fees. We have spent more than $500,000. The longer it took us, a couple architects. So, and also the fire department, they don't have accurate information. We not having detox facilities there. This is all sober living, basically. We consult. These are all healthy people. And we are going to have our least possibly helicopter in case we need it. The health of the people taking care of is the most important for us. So we're going to have our security, our own fire truck, everything. So it's never going to be a burden. But now that's not the issue anymore. I would like you to go ahead, rule on it, and then I'll start brand new. There's no reason to make any request for amendment since I have to start all over anyway.
Because I'm assuming that this is a scaled-down project. I mean, the 100 and some thousand square foot building that was originally proposed, this is going to be scaled down somewhat.
Yes, the room-wise is scaled half, but some of the other facilities are not going to be scaled.
Okay. And I guess, and I just want to make one point relative to fire. I mean, I know we want to try to protect everybody for everything. However, you have residents that live out there as well, and I don't know that those folks can get any faster service than these folks would get faster service. So I just want to make sure that we're being fair here.
Okay. Before we belabor this, thank you, Mr. Tabb. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Tabb certainly seems like a very nice gentleman and an industrious gentleman. My sense is that there are just far too many issues to overcome for a project this big. And as much as I would, you know, I agree with Ms. Warren. Of course, we are in need of rehab facilities, rehab services. As much as I'd like to believe that, I don't know, bringing Lindsay Lohan here would lead to her eventually becoming clean and reviving her great career and then setting up an indigent care facility here. I'm not really ready to take that leap, I guess, though I certainly would love for Mr. Tabb to work with staff in a very practical way so that his time and money is not wasted, our time is not wasted, to see what clearly can be accomplished out in this area. I think that's really critical rather than to, you know, I don't think any of us want to see something after how many years that really isn't in a position to really go forward. So with that, I'd look for a motion if we could, perhaps, Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do hope that Mr. Tabb, as the owner of the commercial property out there, will work with the community and the planning staff, and I'm certainly willing to do that with you, Mr. Tabb, to pursue the real needs of that community. And if we can come up with a definitive smaller project that overcomes some of the obstacles that that larger project presented, certainly we can entertain that. So with that, I'm going to move that we deny the appeal and support the Planning Commission's denial of the conditional use permit, DRC 2003-59, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Patterson, seconded by Supervisor Gibson. If there's no further comments from the board, roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Thank you, and Mr. Tabb, but please do work with staff and with District 5 office if possible. We wish you luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we will move to our next hearing item as we see staff coming in and coming out. And might need one. Madam Clerk, how about introducing the next item while our staff is zooming into place?
Why, certainly. That would be item C3, a hearing to consider an appeal by the Twisselman Aggregate Mine Conditional Use Permit and Reclamation Plan, DRC 2009-0004. It's in the 5th District. Recommend denial of the appeal and approve and sign the resolution approving the project. Approve the conditions of approval, Exhibit 2. Adopt the project and CEQA findings, Exhibit 3. And approve the mitigation and reporting plan, Exhibit 4.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Carroll.
And I'll talk slow while Mr. McKenzie, our project manager, gets his papers together there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an appeal hearing today, and John McKenzie is our senior planner and project manager on this project. There's one comment that I'd like to make, and that is that there have been some questions about whether this is its own separate project or it's really part of another project, the California Valley Solar Ranch project. And in our presentation today, we'll go over that, but I do want to just make it very clear that this is its own separate project. It's its own separate permit, and we have evaluated it as one single project. It's not part of the California Ranch Solar Project. And with that, I think I will ask John McKenzie to make our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Are you ready?
Yes. Thank you, Ellen, Mr. Chair, board members, John McKenzie, planning. Just like to start off with just kind of the order of the day, but I don't mean that this is just a suggestion. I put time in here, but it's whatever your board would like. But just the order of things, I'll make my presentation, and the appellant make a presentation, the applicant public testimony, and appellant and applicant then respond to that, and then I'd be returning it to the board for your deliberations. I just wanted to start off with public participation about the project. I'll get into the description of the project and the appeal issues momentarily. But I just wanted to start off with the project has received a fairly extensive amount of public scrutiny. We've had scoping meetings for this project. It was combined with the solar project, but the aggregate mine was included in the noticing and along with all of these projects, the draft EIR workshop, there was the Planning Commission study session, and there were two hearings on this project. We do have extensive information on the website about the Twisselman project, as well as an expanded notification of the project. I'd just like to start off with the setting. This is the Carrizo Plain. Very wide, open area with very small amount of human intrusion, human development. It does touch upon the Templer Range, of which this project is on the foothills of the Templer Range. In addition to the sparse residences, there is limited agriculture in the area, mostly dry land grain in some areas, as well as grazing. It is remote. There is limited access. Highway 58 is the main state route, and this has been discussed from your previous solar projects, that it does have windy components at each end. There are some county roads that do cross through, but it's a long ways to most development. The zoning is agriculture. This kind of activity, a surface mine, is allowed in the ag zoning. The project has been reviewed for consistency with the county's LUO, land use ordinance, and found to be consistent with that. And as Ellen mentioned, just wanted to make it clear that this, and as you've seen in the environmental impact report, both the SunPower California Valley Solar Ranch project and this aggregate mine were considered in the one document. If you've spent any time looking at the EIR, you've seen that both of these two different distinct projects have been evaluated separately. They do have their own planning numbers. And they have their own impacts. And the loose connection here is that should this be approved, it would provide aggregate for the solar project. It will also provide for other needs in the community, as I'll talk about in a little bit. I'll go through some maps, some graphics. This is the Carrizo Plain in its entirety. You can see the darker blob in the middle is the California Valley subdivision. Above that is the SunPower project, and a few miles above that is the Twisselman mine. And off to the west in the blue is the Topaz solar project. Zeroing in just a little bit closer in, you can see the various projects that are currently being proposed or have received approval in the area. You can see that this is would be connecting to Highway 58, and then you'd be traveling north 3 to 4 miles to get to the Twisselman mine. As I mentioned before, the zoning is agriculture. And then this is a graphic of just showing where the mine is, aerial photo, and the access road. And getting a little bit closer, this is showing where the existing borrow area is, which I'll describe in a moment, as well as the proposed boundaries of the mining site. This is showing you the elements of the mine itself. The red line is showing you the approximate outer boundaries of the ultimate disturbance, and then the various elements of the project, including where there's going to be some siltation or water quality basins. There's going to be some stockpiling of material. There's a processing and staging area, as well as the actual excavation area of the aggregate material. These are some pictures showing these were taken about a year and a half ago of the existing facility, and that you can see that it is a very active effort. This is on top, looking down below. You can see that it's a fairly simple project or simple operation, or has been, and it would remain that with just a little bit more activity with these if phase one goes forward here. To start off with a conditional use permit, this is subject to a conditional use permit. Just going through the permitting process a little bit. The project was heard initially on March 24th. At that point, it was determined that we should wait for, because of the fact that there were two documents considered in the EIR, one for the solar, one for the aggregate, that we're going to have one certified document. That Planning Commission was continued to hear the have the solar project heard on April 19th, and then a decision was then made with the certified EIR in place from that project that would be applying to this one. Planning Commission approved the project on the 26th of May, and subsequently it was appealed to your board today. Just to kind of summarize a little bit about the previous activities, it did start as a ranch borrow pit approximately in 2005. Around 2000. That evolved into something more than that, where material was exported off the site, and that without a permit is considered illegal and non-compliant with the land use ordinance. We didn't find out about that until about with the application being submitted, and then other information was provided that indicated that this off-site exportation began about 2005. Part of the reason for this was the fact that there is no other local aggregate in the area. The closest aggregate's about 23 miles away to the west, and there are other needs. Both the community service district has used the aggregate for its roads that it's charged with maintaining. The BLM lands to the south, as a part of the National Monument, also have aggregate road needs for gravel, or the main other users. Because of the situation without permitting, I'll get back to a little bit. We have been working closely with the Office of Mines and Reclamation on two fronts. One is the review of the reclamation plans, and so there's we're careful and considerate of review of the reclamation plan and making sure that the Office of Mining and Reclamation provided input, of which has been included as conditions. They also reviewed and provided an assessment of the time in which they were not without a permit, but providing material offsite. And so that issue has been carefully worked through, and we've gotten we've included a measure actually in today's memo to you today. Actually, it was an oversight on my part. Condition number 70 that's being added, of which. I'll talk about it in a little bit. Project elements of the mine. It is existing. It's about 10 acres in size. It's expanding to about 23 acres. It's on a 160-acre piece of land. They're proposing three phases. Phase one would be providing material for the solar projects. Phase two and three would be providing material for the other uses. As I mentioned, aggregate needs for other entities in the area, BLM, Community Service District, primarily being the main other users, but it could be applied for other individuals as well. They're proposing up to 100,000 tons per year of aggregate for up to 30-year period. The types of activities this project would include: there's excavation area, stockpiling, there's an overburden area of unusable material, a processing area, and sedimentation basins. Types of equipment that are proposed to be used include a front-end loader, bulldozers, scrapers, and a grader. There will be monitoring as a part of this project. The conditions include many references to extensive monitoring during phase one, during the solar, providing for the solar projects. There's also monitoring that's part of the Surface Mining Reclamation Act. It's an annual inspection at least once a year. We as the SMAR inspectors for the county, will be going out to all of our mines, including this one, to inspect it, and more often as needed. The reclamation plan is part of Exhibit 8, is part of what's being approved today, which basically shows what the project is going to look like at the conclusion of the of the excavation work, of the mining work, and that's kind of a primary ingredient of the SMARA requirements, that you return the land back to its original use as best you can. Just the EIR issues that are relating to the appeal, there's discussions or questions about the biological resources on the site, how hazards and hazardous materials are being handled. You have an earthquake fault in the area. that there's, you know, that needs to be fully evaluated. The alternatives is questioned. The cumulative analysis has been questioned, and the groundwater availability also. We have received one letter of appeal, and in our staff report, staff has provided a response to those issues of the appeal. The main issues are as follows. The first one is the question or concern is that the project has was inappropriately relying on the previously certified EIR. Under CEQA, it is acceptable to consider more than one project under one EIR. And these were kept distinct. Each issue area did have its own chapter relating to each of the two projects, this one for the solar project and one for the aggregate mine. As I mentioned at the outset, the public has been given multiple opportunities to comment on the EIR and the project. The 45-day review period did identify that these two projects were being evaluated in the EIR. The Planning Commission has reviewed the previously certified EIR for adequacy before approving the project. The appellant references piggyback references, which is basically it's just what is being intended there is just the references made in the EIR, basically made references back to the solar project when it I guess the EIR looked at first the solar and then it looked at aggregate. So the under solar it would identify the impacts, identify mitigation measures. And when the aggregate mine part of it was looked at, when the impact analysis was similar and or the mitigation similar, a reference was made back to that previous analysis. Rather than just repeating the same words, the same information twice, the reference was made back to that previous section. There was question about the adequacy of the three phases of the mine being looked at. In the project description, it's clear what those three phases were. Each of those phases were looked at in detail. The conditions recognized the greater intensity of phase one and includes measures to address that. So county staff feels that the phases have been looked at adequately. There was question about the biological analysis being adequate. There are 11 pages of impact discussion. There are numerous and detailed mitigation measures required as a part of the conditions of approval that are you probably have seen in the conditions. Hazardous materials have been adequately addressed, and they require a detailed plan before operations can begin to address storage and any potential spills. Valley fever and anthrax were issues identified in the appeal. There's measures required to address both of those issues. Earthquake impacts were determined less than significant, despite the fact that you are immediately adjacent to the San Andreas Fault. There are no habitable structures, which is the primary concern that we would have, that those structures are not built on faults and they would not collapse on somebody should a large event occur. In this case, there are no structures being proposed, so therefore this is a less than significant impact for this project. An adequate alternative analysis has been completed. The EIR did consider other options to the project. The appeal also suggests the cumulative analysis was not done adequately. That the EIR did look at both its combination with the solar project as well as the other development, which is proposed, the Topaz project primarily, and so the EIR did do a detailed job and looked carefully at the potential cumulative effects of this project combined with other projects in the area. The water analysis has been completed. Staff feels that it is adequate for this project and is happy to answer any specific questions about water use. The appellant also mentions the county's use of aggregate and that its potential of its being a lower quality may compromise potential roads. I believe Glenn Marshall, he was going to be here, but
he is there.
Yeah, over there, okay. He may want to respond to this, but I'll take a quick first shot that, the county, that this might be available to the county. There's aggregate has a range of potential uses on roads. Certain roads have certain requirements, and the county, if the quality of the aggregate is not adequate for certain applications, the county will not use this material. And they will go elsewhere to make sure that the county roads are built properly and to county specifications. The project has been reviewed for SMARA compliance. As I mentioned, the reclamation plan has been adequately reviewed by the county and the Office of Mining Reclamation. We reviewed it. The OMR reviewed it, had comments. We've made sure that those comments will be included in the plans before the operation can start. So there's been a good dialogue between the county and OMR to make sure the reclamation plan is adequate. We have provided all the relevant correspondence between the county and OMR as a part of the Planning Commission staff report. And just on the briefly touching again on the OMR noncompliance condition that's being, I guess maybe I should take a break and just the memo that was has been submitted to you at the beginning of today's hearing includes a few measures. It picks up condition 70, which was included in the Planning Commission's recommendation, but I failed to get that carried across to your board packet. So, but that's being included. It was already considered by the Planning Commission, but it was an oversight on my part. We're also including an indemnification condition, and we're suggesting a small change to one of the other provisions to better clarify the intent of one of the SMARA requirements. But back to just speaking with OMR and compliance, they've looked at all the receipts. They've made an assessment of the costs associated with the fact that during the period from 2005 to the present, any illegal activities that they've been accounted for and material, they assigned a cost associated with that period of time when there was material being exported off the site without the proper permits. And there's a condition which is condition 70, which makes sure that OMR is financially satisfied as far as meeting their regulatory requirements and their financial assessments that they've applied to this project. Some of the benefits, Planning Commission considered when they approved the project is that it will be establishing a local source of aggregate for multiple users, and it is generally considered a good location, having minimal impacts on aesthetics, noise, biological resources. And one other element, too, is that this project, after going through the EIR process, as conditioned, it will not have a significant unavoidable impact with as far as environmental issues go with the project as proposed. So it is recommended by staff that you deny the appeal, approve the resolution to affirm the Planning Commission's decision, approve the conditions of approval, adopt the project and CEQA findings, and approve the mitigation monitoring and reporting plan. All exhibits within your staff report. And that will conclude staff's presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McKenzie. Board questions before we go to the appellants and applicants. Very thorough review by Mr. McKenzie. So we will open it up to the appellant, Mr. Strobridge. You have 10 minutes, and then we will go to whoever is representing the Twisselmans for 10 minutes as well.
My name is Mike Strobridge, and I thank you for hearing my appeal. The public was deprived of a fair opportunity to comment on the project. The staff report states that the public commented on the mine as part of the comment period of the SunPower project's draft EIR. However, this is disingenuous. The Planning Commission's staff report dated March 24th of 2011 states, quote, "The comment letters received during the public review period of the draft EIR were almost exclusively focused on the solar project development," unquote. This is because the mine at the time was part of and parcel of the solar project development, which was a huge and complex proposal. While there was an opportunity to comment on the mine, commenters reasonably planned each comment for later in the process after their comments on the solar project could be aired. Then the act by the Planning Commission of bifurcating the two projects gave the public what turned out to be a wrong but reasonable impression that they would be able to comment on the mine at such time as it was under consideration by the Planning Commission. However, that did not turn out to be the case. The Planning Commission certified the final EIR for the California Valley Solar Ranch on February 24, 2011. This had the effect of cutting off the opportunity for public comment on the mine project until after the environmental analysis had been certified. One purpose of public comment is to provide the opportunity for public input into the approval documents and EIRs prior to the completion. This purpose was frustrated. This date of February 24th is crucial because the reclamation plan for the mine was not released to the public until March 24th of 2011. Thus, the public could not have commented on the reclamation plan until after the certification of the final EIR. This constitutes a failure to proceed according to law, as well as a violation of the public's right to procedural due process. The only way to cure this problem is to recirculate the final EIR for public comment on the EIR's analysis of the environmental impacts of the mine project. This way, the public can finally have a fair opportunity to comment on the entire analysis for the mine project, including the reclamation plan. Now, our letter of appeal urges that correspondence between the county and the Office of Mining and Reclamation be made part of the record. The staff report for today's hearing responds to this request by saying, quote, "All relevant correspondence between the county and OMR were provided as part of the Planning Commission's staff report," unquote. However, the staff report dated March 24th of 2011 for the Planning Commission contains no correspondence at all between the county and OMR. The failure to disclose the relevant correspondence to the public deprives the public of a meaningful opportunity to review the project's effects on the environment. All of these procedural deficiencies, separately and taken together, constitute a failure to proceed according to law. As to substantive impacts on the environment, first I'd like to speak about impacts to biological resources. The final EIR admits that impacts on biological resources will be different than impacts from the solar farm. The final EIR states on page C.6-79 that ground disturbing activities result in direct mortality of lizards, kit fox, antelope squirrel, giant kangaroo rat, and other species. The mitigation measures for these impacts are inadequate to reduce the impacts to a level of less than significant. For one thing, the mitigation scheme for these species depends on the effectiveness of the mitigation plan for the giant kangaroo rat. However, the giant kangaroo rat mitigation plan relies entirely on the acquisition of off-site mitigation. Nowhere does the EIR explain precisely how the substantial adverse impacts from the solar project combined with the likely impacts of the mine project will be mitigated to a level of less than significant. There is no provision for pre-construction surveys for blunt-nosed leopard lizards, according to the EIR section addressing this impact. Impact BR-4 is addressed in table C.6-6 in a wholly inadequate manner. Blunt-nosed leopard lizards, moreover, were not surveyed for in the mine area, according to the EIR, since June of 2010. Without a requirement for pre-construction surveys for blunt-nosed leopard lizard, this fully protected species will be subject to take. The potential impact is not mitigated to a level that is less than significant, much less in a matter that avoids take as required under the Fish and Game Code. Likewise, the impacts on a host of species of concern will not be mitigated. These species include, without limitation, burrowing owl, American badger, and various wintering birds. These impacts on biological resources will be especially severe if the nearby Topaz Solar Farm is approved. The cumulative impacts analysis fails to mitigate the loss of wildlife corridors, and the mine will contribute to the degradation of important corridors for kit fox, pronghorn antelope, tule elk, and other species. These projects taken together will have a significant impact on the Carrizo Plain, and the mine is a significant part of that. I would like to address the impacts on water resources. The lack of an adequate reclamation plan could result in interference with groundwater recharge. I will speak about the reclamation plan in greater detail in a moment. For now, I'd like to point out that the final EIR admits the manner of reclamation can affect permeability rates, see page C.15-40. Adequate permeability depends on an adequate reclamation plan, but there is no reclamation plan. Putting aside the fact that there was no reclamation plan available for public review until after the certification of the final EIR, the reclamation plan that was released on March 24, 2011 is not even the final version. The final EIR admits that at page 10 of Appendix 18B, which is the mitigation monitoring and reporting plan for the aggregate mine project. There, in providing for mitigation to geological impact GE.1-3, protecting stockpiles against wind erosion, the report states, verify final mine reclamation plan is developed and includes short and long-term protection of topsoil stockpiles from erosion. Nowhere does the final EIR indicate when such final version of the reclamation plan will be submitted to the county or released for public review. As for the proper revegetation for permeability in order to provide for groundwater recharge, the final EIR refers the reader to the revegetation erosion control plan. This revegetation plan is yet to be developed, and its provisions are speculative. Therefore, this constitutes an impermissible deferral of mitigation without performance criteria under CEQA. Moreover, there is no assurance, even with the additional conditions of approval, that reclamation will be conducted properly. The uncertainty of water resources in the Carrizo Plain, among other reasons, demands that this deficiency be corrected. Moreover, the protection of soil stockpiles against wind erosion needs to be assured. Condition of approval number 49 fails to do this because it defers to the future performance criteria to be utilized. Similarly, the staff report claims that the concerns expressed in the letter from OMR dated July 16, 2010 have been addressed. This is not the case. For example, in the letter under geotechnical requirements, OMR suggests that the reclamation plan fails to include language governing backfill requirements for the end use of grazing. This point was not responded to by the conditions of approval. One of the purposes of reclamation plans and a requirement of SMARA is that mines provide for a return of the land to be used for mining to an acceptable end use. This reclamation plan fails to ensure that grazing will be possible after the mine project has been completed. The OMR letter states, quote, where backfilling is required for resource conservation purposes, fill material shall be backfilled to the standards required for the resource conservation use involved, end quote. This requirement has been ignored by the county. I would like to point out that the Department of Conservation has the authority under Public Resources Code Section 2774A to remove the county as lead agency in permitting of mines, and that the county has already been threatened with having the Department of Conservation take such action with the letter that I just submitted to you today. Perhaps it is time for the Department of Conservation to do so. To conclude, the process by which this project was approved was deficient. The provisions within the final EIR for this project are legally inadequate. The reclamation plan is inadequate and must be recirculated for public comment. For these reasons and for the reasons laid out in our written appeal, this project should be set aside. Moreover, the EIR for the project should be set aside, rewritten to comply with the law, and recirculated for public review and comment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Strobridge. You'll have 5 minutes afterwards.
I appreciate that.
Okay. 10 minutes for applicant. Mr. Baker, are you representing?
Sure. Good afternoon, Chairman Hill, members of the board. My name is Chris Baker with SunPower Corporation. I'm here today as an agent for the Twistlemans. When we first thought about the solar project, which is a separate CEP application, as you know, it seemed to make an awful lot of sense to try to permit, help the Twistlemans permit this mine in an effort to locate a source of aggregate much closer to our solar project. So that's why I'm here before you today. I want to make the point that the applicant in this case are Roland and Kathy Twistleman. They're in the room. In the case you have any questions later of the owners of the mine, the proposed operator of the mine is Tim Twistleman, who's at the back of the room also. He's a contractor, a resident of San Luis Obispo, and has many years of experience working on construction projects with public agencies, including the county. So he will operate the mine itself. I'm not going to spend the full 10 minutes with you here right now. We're happy to reserve time to answer questions as you get into deliberations. I want to make the point that we would concur that the staff report is extremely thorough. The applicant is prepared to comply with the significant conditions of approval of this project. I also want to refer you back to this morning where I know you considered the environmental monitor that's being proposed for both solar projects, and I want to remind you that that environmental monitor will also be monitoring this mine during the construction phase of the two solar projects to the degree that this mine were to be approved. And so there is the additional assurance on the part of the county that there will be an environmental monitor monitoring the activities of the mine during that critical construction phase of the solar projects. The applicant is willing to work with the environmental monitor and to pay its pro rata share of funding for the environmental monitoring during that period. John's already taken you through the project benefits, but I'll reiterate that certainly for the haul of gravel to our project, and our project does have considerable gravel needs for the construction and maintenance of gravel roads on our site. This is the SunPower site, of course, I'm referring to. There are significant traffic benefits and emissions benefits. An ability to stay completely off of county roads as far as taking gravel down to the SunPower site. Noise benefits, there are no sensitive receptors within the immediate vicinity of this mine. As the EIR states, there were no significant unavoidable impacts. And, of course, we're talking about here improving and enlarging a pre-disturbed borrow pit area, so this is not a pristine area today. And longer term, then, of course, we're in a position to provide a resource to users of aggregate in the California Valley area, whether that be the services district or the county or other users of aggregate beyond the solar projects during the immediate construction period for those projects. So that being said, I want to also introduce a couple of experts we have here today for your more technical questions. We have our senior ecologist here, Dr. Brian Borowski. And we also have our geotechnical expert, Ray Skinner, who can answer any technical questions on the design and operation of the mine itself. And he's right there. So that being said, I'll sit back down, and we're happy to take your questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Baker. Appreciate that. At this time, then I'll open it up to the public, and then we'll come back with some closing statements from each, and then we'll see what the board has some questions. Let me begin with David Webb, followed by Jenny Strobridge, followed by Susan Harvey.
Thank you. I'm David Webb. I live in California Valley for 30 years. I've observed a lot of gravel being moved around out there. I actually worked for the Community Service District as a truck driver when they had their own gravel pit up there. And I worked for them for a year up there. And I understand that there's a lot of stuff buried down under that gravel that shouldn't be there, like old cars and stuff over the years. But that's over with now. They don't have that gravel pit anymore. This Twistleman gravel mine, there's going to be a lot more gravel taken out of that thing than probably has ever been taken out. And it's a drop into the bucket, really, of what California Valley bought from them, what the county bought from them, which, by the way, Mr. McKenzie, you did fail to mention, or you forgot to mention, that Public Works bought this gravel.
illegally. I mean, illegal gravel from an illegal mine. The more you take out, nobody knows what's going to happen to that place up there with that much gravel coming out of there. What's going to happen to the roads and all that dust that's going to be kicked around out there? That's valley fever, you know, galore. That's how everybody gets it out there in California Valley, because they don't water their roads, and they're going to be buying it again, and they don't water their roads. They just don't. They say they do, but they don't. They hardly do. They sprinkle them once in a while. And they do take care of a few people over on the other side, which I call the west side of California Valley. They do a little more watering over there. But the major road, Belmont, out there, that takes a lot of gravel, that California Valley actually buys all their gravel, or has in the past, from the Twisselman people. That road and Arrow Bear Road are nothing but, come on out. Just come on out and observe it. Is all I can say. It's all big clouds of dust, and that's right where these guys are going to be working. The stuff's coming out of the ground. It's valley fever. It's killed my dogs. It's killed my neighbors. My wife has it. I have spots on my lungs. You live out there long enough, you're going to get it. And the guys that are coming out and they're not even used to it, they better make sure somebody waters something, because they're going to be having a heck of a lot of gravel coming in that area up there. Because I'm hearing so much. I don't know whatever happened to the State Water Control Board, because they said they were going to do some studies up there. They're not happy about this. They weren't when I talked to them. Fees, fines. All I want to say is my time's up. Forget about the county standards for roads. We know that. But what I want to say here is, look how the Twisselmans left their old gypsum mine. Go out there and look. See how they left it. See how they reclaimed stuff. The only time they ever started cleaning stuff up, now they're cleaning it up, and it's not 30 feet. There's kangaroo rats that are squashed into there.
Thank you, Mr. Webb. Mr. Obridge?
Come on out and look at the dust.
Thank you.
Followed by Ms. Harvey.
Hi, Jenny Strobridge, Coosa Plains resident. Thank you for listening to me, but I think we have a public perception problem. I wonder if the Auster mine, going through their permitting process roughly 40 miles away, should just start business, and permit will follow. Standards are being set. Precedents for SO County will be followed. SO County stated they can't find illegal mines. So I ask, what is more cost effective? Operate a business, illegal, or do the morally right thing with the fees that are included? How long will Omar continue to give SO County authority to permit mines as this process moves forward? SO County, you can't be so egocentric. We can't think that the good old boys are always going to win in this county. It's going to move forward. The state's going to follow through. The federal government's going to follow through. We need to make sure that SO County does the right thing. When a business is operating illegally, they need to follow the same process. Just because it's cost effective, 40 miles away might be the close, or what, 20 miles Navajo is from California Valley, you still need to do the right thing. So just think about that as you permit this.
Thank you, Mr. Obridge. Ms. Harvey?
Hi, Susan Harvey for North County Watch today. And I'd like to start out by saying that we support this appeal and the comments made by Mr. Strobridge. And we also stand by our position regarding the procedural issues relating to the bifurcation of the two projects. Also, I'd like to address briefly the issue of the past due fees. It has been the position of this board and the previous board that when illegal activities, especially relating to things like gradings and things like that, that the fees be paid beforehand or the restitution be made I'm thinking specifically of the, I think it was like the Toro Creek cell tower. I'm not quite sure now what which one, but I think that the fees need to be paid before you proceed to make a determination about permitting this project. I'd also like to touch briefly on the issue of truck trips. Nowhere that I've seen in the EIR or staff reports, if you're going to haul out 100,000 tons a year with a 25-ton truck, that's 4,000 one-way trips, which is 8,000 truck trips. And I haven't seen anything in the EIR that estimates how much gravel the projects will be taking. So we really don't have any idea about if that 100,000 tons is going to be coming out of there. Is it going to only be delivered locally? How much of it's going to be delivered locally? And how much of it might end up going a further distance? And was there an analysis of the impacts of that transportation of that quantity from the area? And then my one more issue that I have here, I appreciate Mr. Baker making it clear who the applicant is, that it's Mr. and Mrs. Twisselman, because regarding condition of approval 71, indemnification, I'm presuming that means that Mr. and Mrs. Twisselman will be signing the agreement for indemnification. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Harvey. And that will close it to public comment, and we will get into our five-minute closing statements with Mr. Strobridge, followed by Mr. Baker.
Well, this project really bothers me. Bothers me the fact that I'm a local business owner. I apply for all my permits, waste permits, everything else. I pay a decent amount of money for those permits. I have from day one. I've never operated illegally. We're talking about a mine that they say has only operated illegally since 05, which isn't accurate. I actually have one uncle that owns a trucking company out of Santa Maria and another one that's a truck driver. And my uncle in Santa Maria, is his name's Marvin Parrish. He owns MAP Trucking. Now, my uncle Marvin, I talked to him. They've been hauling rock out of this pit since the mid-80s. He had 25 trucks. He said they would run 12-hour days, 7 days a week out of that. They supplied base material to the Arco solar plant. They supplied base material to California Valley, Elkhorn Road, 7 Mile Road, all the roads back to the National Monument at that time. And my second uncle, he hauled trucks out of the Twisselman Mine in 1986 and 1987. They're still around. They're getting their trucking books together for me. So 2005 is not an accurate description of the illegal off-site trafficking. And I'm also curious if the State Franchise Tax Board has been consulted on this. As a business owner, they're on me. You're 3 days late with your State Franchise Tax Board payment. You're in big trouble. We're talking quite a bit of time with no illegal mine, no business license, I'm assuming no tax. San Luis Obispo County purchased material out of this mine, and they paid no tax. They're using my tax money to purchase it. I'm kind of curious as to what's going on with that, because I also have quite a few buddies on Public Works that the county had their own loader out in that mine, loaded their own trucks there. For years, they maintain 7 Mile Road, Elkhorn Road, and Branch Mountain Road, all with base material solely out of Twisselman Mine, and they always have. Now, now, Tim Twisselman submitted a letter to the Planning Commission stating that he actually requested that as a condition of approval that they would pay their fees to OMR, and that the fees were due by June 12th, and that those fees would be paid, if they were permitted by the commission, those fees would be paid by June 12th. Well, I submitted to you today a letter from Candace Maple, the same lady that's dealing with the Twistlemans directly, from July 18th. No back reports have been filed with OMR. They don't just need the money. They need the back reports, the mine activity. None of that has been submitted. OMR mailed the proper documents to the applicant, and they have not been returned. The fees have not been paid. Now, water consumption. SunPower is required to pull all their water on site from the California Valley Solar Ranch project. That well is going to go dry. I can guarantee you that right now. They drilled three holes out there, dry holes, before they got water in that fourth one. I know guys on the Filippone and Thompson crew that drilled them. SunPower says they're going to pull off that, and they're actively, they have Bechtel actively looking for an off-site 300-gallon-per-minute well to pull water for that project and for the mine, not off the project site like required. They've talked to Kenny Tabb from Serengeti Corp. The well that they discussed at that hotel earlier, he's talking to Bechtel right now to sell them water for this project off-site. John Ruskovich, they've done well tests out on his place, and they were in contract. They were trying to contract to buy water from him. So what's the deal here? There seems to be quite a bit of dishonesty. You got an illegal mine. You got fees being promised to be paid. They have not been paid. You got water that's supposed to come off site, but they're trying to contract supplies of water off site currently, as recently as March of this year. So there just seems to be quite a few discrepancies here. And I would request that the board deny this project until these things are at least cleared up and everything is, you know, the public needs to be able to review the proper documents and comment.
Thank you, Mr. Strobridge.
Thank you.
Mr. Baker?
Thank you. We have no further comment at this time or need to respond.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. That will close it to the public testimony, and we'll bring it back to the board for questions, deliberations. Staff has – would you like to respond, actually, John or Ellen or anyone, to anything that came up in public testimony? Excuse me.
John McKenzie. There were a lot of issues touched upon. I don't know, you know, where to start, really, and so it's. I'm happy to respond to any issues that were raised.
Well, how about any that were raised that you haven't responded to already, and are any new issues that have been raised would be
there's,
helpful.
Well, there's. I don't think there's new issues.
Mr. Chair, Ellen Carroll, I'll add a few little comments to that. I was taking really careful notes and listening carefully, and we've been processing this project for quite a while, and a lot of letters have come in, and as far as the testimony at today's hearing, I don't hear any issues that were brought up that are new. There are many issues that are brought up that are covered specifically in our conditions of approval, and just a few of them regarding dust and the issue of dust, that's been a major issue discussed with this and the other projects in the region. And condition number 18 is a very specific condition that requires dust control. Regarding biology, there were a lot of comments regarding endangered species and mitigation mitigation requirements. We have conditions number 20 through 46 regarding all of the biological impacts and mitigations. Regarding reclamation and the reclamation plan, conditions number 66 through 69. And then there's a little bit of a change in the condition number 1 that we've submitted to you in your memo today, and those all speak to the reclamation plan. And then as far as the fees due from the Office of Mining and Reclamation, as John McKenzie mentioned, we have condition number 70 that we're recommending that your board include today. So that's a kind of a general overview of some of the conditions that cover the issues that were discussed today.
Okay, let me go to my colleagues and see what questions they might have. Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of things to follow up regarding Mr. Strobridge's testimony. Ms. Carroll, you referenced condition of approval number 70, which we received this afternoon regarding past due fees to the Department of Conservation, must be paid within 45 days of a permit approval. Do we have an accounting from them as to what those fees are? And if they aren't paid within those 45 days, what happens?
This is John McKenzie. Yes, they have provided several iterations of accounting between $43,000 and $56,000, I believe. I believe the most current number is $43,000 in terms of what is owed to OMR for these past years without permits. If that is not paid, then that will be they'll be out of compliance with that condition of approval, and they will not be allowed to operate the project.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Strobridge raised the issue of the reclamation plan not being submitted until after the Planning Commission actually certified the EIR for the project. And I'm curious to know, I know there has been one submitted, but is that timing an issue?
Yeah, I'm always, I guess, it's surprised to hear that kind of discussion. I've thrown up an email just to kind of memorialize that. It's not a very official looking response, but it is from Office of Mining Reclamation of December 10th of 2010, where this is subsequent to the original. They said that basically there was a originally submitted to OMR. We received a letter on 7/16. 2010, saying good plan, but you're missing some information, and here's what needs to be done. The applicant then submitted that information. It was reviewed again by OMR, and this is the response that we did get back from them. That basically is saying we've reviewed the revised plans and we find them acceptable. So I guess I'm baffled at the fact that they obviously had a reclamation plan in which to review and comment on two times, and they found adequate the second time. So I'm not quite understanding where Mr. Strobridge is coming from, in that there's no reclamation plan in which to review and make a decision upon.
Okay, so according to this, then OMR had received the material and had reviewed it and found it in compliance?
That's correct.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back on the process issues, there was also some question about the public's ability to comment on the draft EIR. You circulated a draft EIR, and if you just, for the public's edification, when was that released, and what kind of comments did you get back on the draft EIR as regards to this project?
Well, we did not receive, as previously stated, I don't know if we received any comments. The big elephant in the room was the solar project. Mm-hmm. But, however, this project, all of the notification, and it's been included as a part of all the public discussions, public meetings, as well as the draft EIR phase. It was clearly identified. There's an aggregate mine being proposed as a part of this, that's included in this EIR that we're hoping to hear comments on.
Okay.
But because of the fact, it is true that solar project was dominating the discussion, and that is the focus of what the commenters did comment on.
Okay. And so the public had the opportunity to make comments at the draft EIR stage.
Right, and just Ellen Carroll, again, environmental coordinator, just as an additional comment, the title page and the title of the EIR includes both projects and both project numbers. I attended the scoping meetings and also the public workshops that we had on the draft EIR, and while many and most of the comments were relating to the solar project, we also did get comments on the mine itself, and responded to those appropriately during the meetings or after those meetings.
Okay, and then on condition 70, within 45 days of permit approval, the evidence of the back fees need to be paid. How does that relate to there's also the provision for requesting a notice to proceed. As I understand it, this mine is inactive at this point. Is there anything?
It's not a mine at this point.
It's a borrowed pit for the ranch can continue to use it under its current.
They could, yes, okay. As long as there's no export of material outside the ranch boundaries.
So prior to any export for any particular purpose, they have to request a notice to proceed.
Yes.
And that triggers a number of conditions. And just for my colleagues' benefit, I mean, I looked through the conditions on the biological, which are similar in many ways to those of the solar projects, and they seem to have covered all the bases there. So really, it's a different time frame. This 45 days after permit approval is a different time frame, but presumptively before operation of the mine for export?
Yes.
Okay. And then finally, could you tell us specifically what is the water supply for this for the mine?
Sure.
And what kind of consumption per year or any other unit of time are we expecting here?
The water source for this is there's going to be two there's a, during phase one it would be between the reservoir to the north of the site as well as from the solar project itself, you know, with the water that's available from that mine. Water trucks from that operation would be used to a great extent to help keep the roads watered.
And the source, I mean, again, back to a source, there's a well somewhere that's
there is a well, yes, that feeds the above ground surface reservoir.
Okay.
That's to the north of the mine.
All right, that's one water source,
yes.
But you referenced
the second one would be on the within the solar project boundaries using their well.
Okay.
And maybe a second well if that's needed.
And we've accounted for all the necessary trucking if we have to truck water in to do whatever dust control is necessary?
The water will be from one of those two sources. So it's going to be a few miles to the south on the solar project, or it's going to be from the reservoir and associated well to the north.
Okay. And roughly what kind of quantities are we talking about for a year's
That's an excellent question. It has a little more involved answer because the amount of water to be used is a function of
you may feel the presence of a geotechnical expert behind
maybe he would have something to say about that.
Okay. Let's recognize
sure,
Mr. Skinner.
I'll stop, but
please.
I can add it.
Oh. And state your name for the record, please.
Ray Skinner. I'm a geologist consulting for SunPower. We were involved in some of the pump testing of the well that was drilled. That was able to sustain rates of 50,000 gallons a day over the course of the pump testing. During periods of high activity in the mine, we're estimating as much as 5,000 gallons a day would be needed for dust control. So, you know, there's an ample supply of water from the well for both the needs on the solar site as well as the mine.
Okay. That's what I needed to know. Thanks,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
Further questions for Mr. Skinner?
I want to just follow up with that on the water question, if I could.
Okay. Supervisor Meacham.
Because I know that water was a concern of mine through the whole thing with all of the different solar projects. The assertion that SunPower is now seeking water from this other site on that other well that Mr. Tabb was just here, is that something that you're seeking as well?
I have not heard of that or have no knowledge of that.
We'll let Mr. Baker respond as the SunPower representative.
I guess the reason I'm asking is because we were assured that there was plenty of water in the facility that you had to be able to do what you're going to do.
Absolutely. Supervisor Meacham, so with my SunPower hat firmly on, we're intimately aware of the conditions of approval of our project. I've personally read every single word of them and completely intend to comply with all of those conditions, including that one.
So back to my question, are you seeking that outside water source?
We're not, no.
Thank you.
Okay.
And if I could just real briefly just to provide a bigger picture, dust palliatives or soil binders are a possibility to help reduce dust down and reduce the watering requirements, as well as just the number of truck trips. We'll factor in how much watering an area, as well as just the weather conditions. You know, during rainy times, don't water. During hot, dry times, you water more. So if you have a rainy season, a heavy rainy season, it'll be less. If you have a dry drought, it'll be more.
Okay. All right. Any further questions or comments? Mr. McNulty, do I see you want to weigh in, perhaps?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. Not the appellants, but North County Watch has raised a question about a fee that is proposed as condition number 55 on page C371. And they don't make the connection, but I think they challenge the fee, I think, because they might later allege that the fee is necessary to mitigate an impact, and if the fee can't be charged, then the impact might not be mitigated. I thought it would be useful to have the applicants state for the record that they don't intend to challenge the county's ability to impose this particular fee, because I think that would settle the question of whether or not the fee will serve as adequate mitigation. I also thought it might be useful to have Mr. Marshall speak about the fee. I spoke with him about what the county intends to do and how it intends to collect it, and it's a really small amount of money. So whether or not we succeed in collecting it or not probably doesn't make that big of a difference to the road system. But I thought both of those things would be useful to have on our record.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Marshall.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hill, Supervisors, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. The road fee Mr. McNulty is referring to, the condition that specifically comes out of the ordinance, section 2236.110, which basically is applied only to mining sites, is extraction sites. And as Mr. McNulty said, the truck trips, what we were looking at when we calculated this fee is we were only looking at maybe 10 miles of county roads specifically being impacted, and only at about 26% of the truck trips associated with those county roads attributed to this mine. So as Mr. McNulty said, the mining fee in our eyes is fairly, it's reasonable. And we have met with Public Works, met with the applicant, Mr. Twisselman, a couple months ago, and we all seem agreeable that this is fair and equitable.
Okay.
And I am available for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Glenn. Mr. Baker, would you like to reply? I guess Mr. McNulty would like you to agree on the record to this fee as a condition.
Thank you. Yes. So Chris Baker, again, we did expressly discuss this issue with the applicant during lunch, and we're reassured that there's no intent on the part of the applicant to challenge this fee at any future point. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. McNulty? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Baker. Mr. Patterson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Marshall. His appearance here raised a question. There was a question about the adequacy of the material for use on county roads, and
certainly.
Could you speak to that?
Certainly I can. The base material that comes out of the backup, when a county project, when we design a road, we specify the type of material, and if the supplier can't meet the criteria, we usually default to Caltrans standards for the criteria specifications of the material. Class 2 has certain gradation for the material. If the supplier can't meet those standards and certify that they've met the Caltrans standards, then we would not accept it for the project. However, for a typical gravel road in the county, for instance, the county maintains a couple gravel roads, as Mr. Strobridge had brought up, 7 Mile Drive being one. If the design engineer determines that the material coming out of that mine pit is adequate for that use, then we would use it, and we would just write that into the specification for the project.
Okay, so you do an assessment prior to writing the specs as to whether or not it's adequate?
We write the spec for the adequacy, and then the supplier has to provide that.
Mm-hmm.
And we can gradate that specification. We can bring it down to like a class 3 aggregate base that might this mine may be able to supply for us.
Okay. That helps. Thank you. That answers that question.
Okay. Further questions?
I don't see any other questions from my colleagues, so I will move that we deny the appeal and approve staff's recommendations to approve the resolution to affirm the Planning Commission's decision to approve the project, including the conditions of approval in Exhibit 2 and the CEQA findings in Exhibit 3 and the mitigation and monitoring and reporting plan in Exhibit 4, and also include the conditions of approval submitted by staff this afternoon.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Patterson, second by Supervisor Gibson. If there's no further comment, I would agree with my colleagues in my comments that the certainly the conditions address the mitigation and monitoring quite adequately, and I can support the motion. So, Madam Clerk, please roll call.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. DeShera.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Okay, thank you. That brings us to the end of our business today. We appreciate everybody who came before us. We will stand adjourned until next Tuesday, August 9th. Thank you.